Testing, testing, testing. Check, check. Giant f***ing centipede under my bed will probably shoot out in the middle of the recording and interrupt my train of thought. I will be saying, hey guys, Transformers Prime's got dragons. That's pretty oh f***ing god sh***. There goes the centipede.
Yep.
I wonder if I can convince it to just do it now.
What the f*** is going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WTF at TFW. There is a gigantic centipede under my bed! And my name's Vangelis. How are you doing? Joining me today is Gog Dog.
Hey, how's it feel to have a walking bratwurst running around your floor?
Jesus Christ! That thing scared me witless, and I know when it comes out, it's going to be moving at a pretty good clip. At some point, it's gonna, unless there's a hole there that it can exit through in the wall that I don't know about, at some point, this gigantic black shape is gonna dart out from under my bed, either under my chair or towards the open door. I'm hoping towards the open door so I can stop thinking about it, and that will probably make me jump, because it was gigantic! Also joining us today is Seth Buzzard.
Hello.
Hi.
I think you gave Skype a hard time, because after you finished yelling and started talking again, you sounded really weird for a while.
Skype can't handle my power. That's all that's happening.
Yeah. You shook the internet.
I'm a giant in this industry. Let me tell you. We're here
Just briefly, if I could address a situation that came to light yesterday. There is another Seth Buzzard on Twitter.
What?
It is not me. It's some guy that wears cowboy boots to church and has skull rings in his blue jeans. Seth Buzzard 1 is not official Seth Buzzard.
He doesn't look too kindly on people who have quote-unquote cartoons as avatars.
What?
He also likes to stand in open barn doors and trying to look tough.
How did people get in touch with this Seth Buzzard 1?
I don't know why he'd bother. He's a pretender.
I mean, how did anyone even discover him? Like, what?
Well, okay, so there was a Twitter conversation going on amongst his Goonie friends. And at some point during the conversation, one of his dopey friends accidentally deleted the one. So now all the tweets were coming to me. So I get this tweet, and my name is tagged with like three other people, and it just says, "You guys are my idols." I'm like, who, what? Who is this? And so then I do view conversation. I'm reading back in the conversation. I'm like, this has nothing to do with me. What is all this? And then I get far enough back to where the tweets aren't highlighted anymore. And I'm like, wait, what? Now why isn't it highlight? And then I notice it says at Seth Buzzard 1 from that point on, going back. I'm like, who the hell is this? So I click on that to go to the profile, and it's some dude. And the profile's like, I got skull rings in my jeans, and I wear my cowboy boots to church. And it's some guy like standing in a barn door trying to look tough, looking in the distance, getting gum cancer from chewing tobaccos. So then I tweeted, I am not Seth Buzzard 1, do not be confused, or something to that effect. To which Gog Dog replied, imitator. And then he replied to Gog Dog, I'm the imitator. You're the one with the cartoon picture avatar. And I was really hoping he was going to come at me, because I was in the mood for trolling. And I was, oh man, I had all kinds of stuff on deck. But he didn't come at me, so I couldn't use any of the material.
I like how Seth for an entire day was preparing for a Twitter war that never happened.
Well, not an entire day, but Like, it started, and I was like, man, I hope this dude comes at me. I hope he comes at me. And then he never came at me. I was like, oh. So, yeah. So, you know, because apparently it's still, like, 1998 when you sign up for an internet service of some sort and the name that you think would be cool is already taken. You just add a number to the end. fake buzzard.
More like Feth Buzzard. Means fake. Yeah.
You should have just used Vulture. That would have been fine.
Seth Vulture. Vulture.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Seth. That might be his actual name, though, because I've known people with the last name of Buzzard before.
That's weird.
So it is very possible that that is literally his name.
Well, too bad. He didn't.
Yeah, he was late.
Should have joined Twitter earlier.
Seth Pigeon. Seth yeah. Peacock.
Ooh. The most savage of Seths.
Anyway, we're here today to talk to you about Transformers. Guys, New York Comic Con's happening right now, and I'm not going to be able to go. Sad. But we do have a lot of contacts who are there, and with rather perfect timing, TFW 2005 has been labeled as an attack site by Google. So you can tell that it's a big news week this week. We do have, however, after wading through the Google warnings, some pictures from the panel. And the panel was Prime-oriented, so we hit that up and see some pictures of Beast Hunters. So we've confirmed Beast Hunters is the third season of Prime. There's a whole lot of text here that goes with the panel pictures. I should have probably looked at that before. Apparently something to do... Oh, never mind. That's for an episode that's airing tomorrow. We'll talk about that on Primetime. But kind of focusing on the toy side of things, apparently Legion Class is having stuff like advanced defense armor and diesel weapons. diesel weapons.
Bumblebee just got diesel, son.
That's right.
Vin Diesel weapons.
We're going to have some new commanders. There's going to be some more vehicles. Apex armor is happening. The deluxe Beast Hunter guys, like the characters we've already seen, they look like they're remolds, but like remolds in the way of they've had 5 million levels of savagery just bolted onto their bodies. I kind of dig it myself because I like spikes. But, like, we've got Bumblebee, Soundwave, and Wheeljack looking all spikeified. I want to know why. On the Voyager level, we've got the dragon, who is the big focal point, apparently, of Beast Hunters. And, this is some cool stuff in there. So I figured we just kind of go around the table, talk about some of this New York Comic Con stuff till we get tired of it. I'm feeling all prepped and ready to go today. I had a muffin and, like, two pitchers of beer. So I'm ready to podcast. Gog Dog, what's something out of these New York Comic Con reveals that you'd like to cover?
Well, the biggest one that we saw was it actually came out as a pre-panel preview yesterday was this Voyager Predaking.
Yes.
And apparently he's not the only Voyager, but they kind of did like they did at BotCon 2011, where they showed a silhouette and said, "Oh, we're not ready to reveal this yet." So apparently there's figures yet that are still kind of secret, like they did with, I guess, what we all assumed was movie Soundwave, where they're like, we can't show you this yet because it's a surprise.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So they kind of pulled something like that by saying there's more Voyagers besides Predaking, but whatever. But he looks interesting for sure. I want to see hands-on impressions of him, but, I mean, It's certainly neat, for sure. I like what I've seen. It's not blowing my mind. It's not like, oh my god, the minute that pops up on eBay, I gotta have it this minute. But it's certainly like, okay, like they're trying something different. I appreciate it. And I'm definitely into, you know, Beast Formers and that sort of thing. I mean, this is more of kind of like the G1 take on animals, or the Jungle Planet Cybertron, where they're mechanical animals, you know, kind of like the G1 Predacons or the Dinobots. They're animals, but they're robot animals. Everything,
I mean, everything about the dragon guy, it's like I said, it's not, I don't think it's mind blowing, but it's certainly like, yeah, okay. Like, he looks cool. I can see myself picking that up, especially looking at what appears that the most of the line is just retools of existing figures, which I don't know. Like, I mean, that kind of really bums me out. And I understand why. Like, this appears to be the continuation of their cost saving measures that they're doing in this line. But the fact that they're basically reissuing the majority of the deluxes again with spikes remolded.
Lots of spikes.
I didn't look at a single one of those and say like, I even want that. And that's a, I don't know if that's like a good thing or a bad thing, because like I'm looking at the majority of this toy line and it's like, okay, if these new Predacons, which they've been referred to as far as I can tell, like if these new Predacons turn out to be cool, I'll pick up the four or five or however many more that they showed and are yet to come out, have yet to come out, but are yet to be previewed. But it's, I don't know. Like, I'm not excited in the least for a bunch. A lot of the Prime figures I've got were mediocre and some were downright good. But I can't see myself getting super excited for, let's repaint these in some really odd colors and put, yeah, I mean, some of them are extensive retools for sure with new parts and stuff all over, but still the same figure. And especially with the price of deluxes now, like, I can't see myself picking up this entire line again in a new scheme with some, with spikes and new weapons or whatever. Like, it's like, I don't know, but so I, you know, then again, like looking at the Predaking and stuff, it's like, oh, that, you know, so that is actually kind of really appealing to me. But yeah, I don't know. Like, Predaking looks cool. I think maybe he could use a little bit more paint, which is, you know, not something that the Prime line again has really been knocking out of the park as far as paint apps go. But the mold looks like it could be really interesting.
It looks huge for the price point too. Like with the wingspan, that shot of the girl at the booth holding it, See, it looks like it's like with that wingspan in place, it seems pretty wide in mass for a modern Voyager. I am also kind of curious to get it in hand. Also, it's a neat looking dragon. I kind of dig that. Seth, what about you? What's something from this panel that caught your eye?
Well, like what Gog was just saying about not being sure if he wants to get into the whole line, like maybe just focusing on the Predacons and forget about the spiky dudes. But didn't I kind of, when we were theorizing on what Beast Hunters means, didn't I say something very similar to this? Like maybe there's Predacons loose and they have to be hunted down, or I think that was one of my theories.
You tell us, Seth.
Well, I'm claiming it.
We can inquire.
I called it.
We can inquire upon one of our TFW historians to fill in that gap.
Even if I didn't get it exactly on the nose, I'm putting a point up for me. Scored a point. I called it. But yeah, looking at the pictures, I mean, it. I think it's curious. But I do remember saying that it'd be I wouldn't be surprised if it was a deal like what RID was in reverse of, we're just coming out of Beast, so let's keep Beast in there as the primary villain and introduce Autobots again to see how people respond to vehicles. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is that in reverse. We'll keep the Autobots and Decepticons around. We'll introduce Predacons as a new enemy. See how people respond to animals. But being this more mechanical style animal, they're not really committing all the way to it and not actually being animals, but like more like monster, kind of monstery animals.
Hmm.
I don't think if that is their thinking, I don't think that they're going to get a good sample of people's interest, because they're not really representing true Beast Formers. Then, like, the spiky Autobots are weird. I mean, we'll have to see if they actually end up looking like that in the show. I think it'd be kind of strange if they did, like, these crazy spiked-out toys that weren't represented in the show, but I guess we'll find out when that season starts. You know, but it's a curious idea. Hopefully it works out. But at the very least, it's an attempt to keep the show fresh by introducing this new element. So...
Oh, can I say one more thing before you choose your thing, Seth? One thing I just realized too is it looks like that these new Voyager, at least because the only Voyager I think that we've seen that's new is the Predaking, but he doesn't actually come with one of those doofy ass mech tech weapons. Like he comes with two blasters that like clip on to his body
that shoot missiles.
Yeah, so that's cool. It looks like maybe they're, with the new molds, they might be ditching the stupid mech tech gimmick. So, and the other thing I noticed, too, is all these guys seem to be in G1 Predacon colors, like orange, black, and yellow.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
Well, laser back is in the RID Bruticus colors. Like that kind of neat, like, violet, crimson with yellow.
Oh, okay. Because most of the others, I thought, I mean, maybe I didn't get a good enough look at them, but it looked like they were all like orange and black, kind of like the G1 Predacons, but maybe, yeah. Maybe not. Maybe it's just the, cause I looked at most of these on my phone cause I was working today and didn't really get a chance to take a close look at some of this stuff, but oh well, but at the very least, hail the death of mech tech.
Well, the thing that's catching my eye is what appears to be the very named signature weapons. Like the easy one being Bumblebee's Hawk Bow, which he has as a deluxe toy and as a Legion toy. Hmm. So maybe that's going to be a culmination of the relics. Like, it's going to lead into season 3 with like, all right, so you guys had your relics. Here's the thing, season 3, everyone gets one. Go. There be dragons outside. They go and fight dragons with relics. Alpha Trion shows up. Strokes his beard. I'm a wizard! I'm also interested by the fact that, at least on the Legion scale, we are getting a smokescreen toy stateside. He comes with a chain bolter, which literally looks like a chain sword on a bolt gun from Warhammer. So that's interesting. And we finally see the return of... the Legends Arachnid that we saw last BotCon, I want to say.
Yep.
In development. I will say, it actually looks a lot better than I remember it looking in the BotCon panel. This may be in light of the Deluxe Arachnid being very trash, but it's cool to see that toy come about again. I was wondering if we were going to be seeing it before Beast Hunters. It looks like we're going to be seeing it in Beast Hunters. But yeah, I'm interested in this stuff. I think it's kind of a neat idea with this new faction basically just being a bunch of dragons. If they can like make them all and their engineering is interesting. I mean, it is a lot of quadruped transformations, but there's ways to make that engaging, I find. So I don't dislike it. I'm not head over heels in love with it. I do kind of like the super spiky remolds of the existing toys because they took the spikes so far on so many of them that it kind of goes from being like, eh, all right, to like, okay, well, that's kind of fun. Also, Soundwave's remold comes with a new chest robot, which is Ravage. And that's kind of neat, too. That kind of answers the question of, like, I wonder if they're going to do anything else with Soundwave's chest gimmick. So it's neat that they figured out a way to make a little quadruped fit in there. But I think the big key with Beast Hunters is going to be, what's the unnamed Voyager, and what will we be seeing beyond Wave 1? Because maybe Wave 1 is so remold-loaded for the sake of filling out a first wave, and maybe, like... If they only have to develop like one fully new deluxe for the first wave, that gives them the space to continue working on more than one new deluxe for the second wave. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But it's neat. Now we know where Prime's going toy-wise, I guess show-wise to a degree as well. I'm not in love with it. I don't dislike it. I find it kind of interesting. Also dragons. Any other thoughts on, I guess, on the Prime toys that or the Prime news that we got from New York Comic Con? Do you think that they're? I mean, the toys don't always mean things, but if one was going to start thinking of, like, do the toys indicate any plot developments, in the Beast Hunters line we have an Arachnid toy, a Smokescreen toy, and Bulkhead in Roadbuster colors, as well as a Bulkhead in Apex armor. You think any of that... Yeah, to me, that all just seems like toys using the names from the show, but do you think any of that might amount to something, storyline-wise, in Prime?
Well, I think the easy guess is the Autobots have to, like, power up to deal with this crazy new threat of the Predacons, and there was that teaser video that was out today, and I mean that seemed to imply to me at least that this is like maybe some Decepticon experiment gone awry or something, and I just wonder what role the Decepticons are going to play when the Predacons hit the scene.
Yeah,
maybe they have to join forces at some point
to fight the dragons.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun watching Twitter yesterday, like seeing people go from, yeah, dragons, to kind of, you know, within about an hour, some people kind of go like, all right, guys, one more line. It's just one more line about the Dovahkiin or something like that. And I'm out. I'm done. Twitter's gone. I've had enough.
The only other thing with Beast Hunters is that I want to mention is they also showed some Creo Transformers Prime Beast Hunters.
Oh, right. I was going to move on to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So most of it is kind of, you know, it's fine. Like, Ripclaw looks kind of neat. He actually strangely almost looks like a G1 Soundwave, almost, which is a little weird. Just a thumbnail quickly. He looks like if you were to paint him blue, he would look just like War for Cybertron Soundwave. I mean, not the arms and the wings, but the body and the feet and everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, wow, that's kind of weird. But, you know, and then you have, like, Battle.net Bumblebee, who for some reason turns into, a safari jeep with an animal net. It's like, okay. You know, and there's a couple other things on there. And then the thing that really caught my eye was I had seen this explode on Twitter today. Everybody's like, oh, my God, holy S, Hasbro is doing Corrada. And that's all I saw. So I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, they showed a Corrada toy? Like, what the hell? And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, is this the first time the name's ever been used in the U.S. by Hasbro? And somebody had said, well, they couldn't remember, but he might have been name dropped in the IDW comic. He probably appeared in, you know, the IDW, the Beast Wars, you know, like style, More Than Meets the Eye style book, like they did for Dreamwave for all the profiles.
Oh, yeah.
But so he was probably in there, and outside of a cameo in the comic, probably never in the U.S. actually was used. So I'm just like, oh, wow. Like they're actually using this name and have registered it. Like, what's going on? So everybody's like, oh, it's in Creo. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm still kind of interested because it's Corrada. Like, I love Corrada. I love Beast Wars Neo toys, so let's see what's going on. And then I actually finally saw the image, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Dangerous on both ends.
Yeah, so it's cool that Hasbro registered the name. Even it's spelled a little different. It's like Corrada. So I don't know if that's a typo, because some of the stuff in their slides is not always necessarily accurate either.
What, like Troll Cutter.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and also, they even originally misspelled Arachnid's name, because I guess they didn't have the copyright, and then for some reason they were able to use it. So, you know, this stuff changes, so who knows? That might change by the time it comes out. It doesn't matter either way to me, but it's just like, I mean, I guess he's a minifig, so technically, like, he's a Creon, I guess, but it's a Creon snake made of pivots or something.
I think that he's supposed to be the companion piece to the Windcharger Creon, so he's more like, he's not really a Creon, he's just an animal made of Creo blocks.
Okay, it's just, I don't know, I was a little like, oh well, that was kind of anticlimactic, because like, for a good 20 minutes, I was like, oh my god, people are mentioning Corrada, and I'll have time to look. And then finally, when I got a chance to see the picture, I was like, oh, man, like, I was getting pumped up, and that's what we saw. But it's, like, it's you know, it's like, the whole two-handed thing. It's like, yeah, it's doofy. It's kind of like, I don't care if I ever own that or not. But on the other hand, like, I have to give Hasbro credit for, like, using the name. Like, you know, it's like somebody pulled that out of nowhere. It's a Japanese-only character from the, you know, late 90s. So, like, at least kudos to them, I guess, for using it. Like, yeah, they've been, because they've been doing that with Creo. Like, they straight up used Auto Troopers. And, yeah, I think Hasbro technically had to trademark the name when Botcon used the name. I think that automatically means that Hasbro, like, has to trademark it and use it. But at least Hasbro used it, you know? I mean, there were Hasbro-issued Auto Troopers, and that in itself is still kind of like, okay, it's still neat that they did it, regardless of whether it was totally in-depth or not. So, like, I'm of two minds at this. On one side, I'm just like, I don't probably care if I ever own this set. And on the other hand, it's like, but still, like, they use a name, and so that's kind of cool, I guess. And it's like somebody did something right, or at least has any idea of who those characters are. So I don't know. But
I wouldn't be surprised if it was kind of a deal where, like, there's probably been people in the past who have wanted to use some of these more obscure names, and they would always get stopped for whatever reason. Like, no, mm-hmm. we need to do another Bumblebee. But, like, the dudes working in Creo could get away with it. Like, maybe they're not being as paid as close attention to, or they're not so worried about it right over there. It's like, yeah, let the Creo guys do whatever they want. It makes them happy. Like, yay, Kanata, yay.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at those little scamps. They're all excited.
I don't know, Seth, have you got any other thoughts on Karada, or just the Creo reveals in general?
I like some of the mini-bot characters, like Windcharger was in there, wasn't he?
Yep, and, he's with Karada.
Yeah, and I think Braun was in there. I didn't look at the Creo stuff too much, but
there's Troll Cutter.
But, ooh, I don't even know what that means.
It's supposed to be Trail Cutter, which is Trailbreaker's new name because they can't use that name anymore. So,
and yes, they misspelled Troll Cutter.
Minifig transforming Trailbreaker.
Okay. For some reason, yeah, just when I went clicking through quickly, like, Braun registered in my head. But, yeah, they should just do a green repaint and call him Braun. I like, so with the Troll Cutter, the little things pointing out details.
Mm-hmm.
Troll Cutter's details are improved fuel efficiency and humor hides self-esteem issues. So
That is tied for me with Karada's dangerous on both ends and small target profile.
Yeah, I like the low self-esteem issues. But yeah, I mean, if I see it on the shelf, I mean, that Windcharger Karada is going to be really tempting because I really like Windcharger. He's a personal favorite. And then Karada's just so goofy. But, yeah, you know, I'm not a big Creo guy. So we'll see what happens when it comes out.
Yeah, the new Creo stuff looks neat to me. It looks like they're taking the minifigures, like Creons that can quote-unquote switch forms, and applying that to those little two-packs with stuff like Karada or Grimwing. So, yeah, that's neat. There's nothing in the Creo that's really making me, like, jump up and down going, like, oh, I need that, like Vortex did in this latest wave of Creo. Yeah. But
I was kind of surprised that there's even new Creo Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they went from that first batch where they were practically, or they literally were giving them away at BotCon, and the club was selling them for dirt cheap, and then the next thing that pops up was Battleship, I just thought, oh, this is going to be like a rotating deal. Like, they're just going to rotate through franchises, and so Transformers is done. But, no, they came back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to dare venture off topic a little bit, I guess they revealed G.I. Joe.
Yeah, with flocking.
Yeah, so that's I haven't seen any pictures of that stuff, but
I haven't either. I heard apparently the Joseph Colton Creon has actual flocked hair on its head. It's
exciting.
Yeah.
I saw somebody tweeting that there's no Destro. I think they said Baroness. I think somebody was tweeting that there's no Destro on Baroness and then accused Hasbro of being racist. So
I'm not very interested in G.I. Joe Creo if there is no Destro available. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, definitely kind of tarnishes the chrome on that.
Literally.
Yeah, I was reaching on that one. Reaching.
It sure kind of Scottishly sells the arms on that one. Ugh.
You see, I was actually trying to make something out of it. You were just trying to be silly.
Yep. What can I say?
Nothing.
I'm trying to live with a giant centipede being in the room with me.
Centipedes don't like forced humor.
Yeah,
you're just making it angry.
Yeah, well, if it make it angry and that means it shows itself, then I'll know where it is. I have no way of dealing with the thing next time I see it either. Because it was big enough that it's like I can't cup it. And like if I try to smash it with something, it's just going to be a big mess. I don't like smashing things.
Maybe you could corral it.
Try to aim it somewhere?
Yeah. Focus its bullet-like body in a direction. Maybe you could lead it to Jacob's room. What do they eat? Maybe you could leave a little crumb trail. What do centipedes eat? Reese's Pieces, like E.T.?
Something like that, I think. Yeah, Reese's Pieces, rat tails, breadcrumbs. That kind of stuff.
Dreams. It's probably clinging to your ceiling right now. Just waiting for an opportunity to drop on you like a ninja.
Now, as far as I know, centipedes cannot easily scale walls like that when the walls don't have little ledges to perch on.
Well, I didn't say it did it easily, but it's determined.
Now, I also just looked up and I don't see any centipedes on my ceiling.
Oh, because it's a ninjapede.
Yeah.
All those 100 legs are going to throw 100 little tiny ninja stars at you.
I will challenge it to a roundhouse kick contest.
That's a bad move because they got more legs.
But that means that they have less of an easy time orienting all those legs for a roundhouse kick.
No, they arch backwards. So they form a ring of legs, and they just come flying at you, spinning.
Eternal roundhouse kick.
Yeah.
Damn it. Well, guess what? There's new generations toys to talk about. Just two.
Oh, good.
We already knew about them.
They're awesome.
We talked about these a couple weeks ago, the return of Energon Optimus Prime and Energon Omega Supreme. And I was saying, hey, Energon Omega Supreme's a neat toy. That's a good chance for a lot of folks who missed out on it. So we got to see what it looks like. It has a new head with flip-down visor and a new arm, so it has a big-ass crusher claw. And it's been painted in premium metallic paint. The thing has basically been made to look as close to War for Cybertron Omega Supreme as possible. And that's kind of cool. It means they did nix the headmaster gimmick, which is fine. And it means that when it turns into its vehicle mode, rather than having like a weird little like just scissor claw thing on the back, it has a giant crusher claw just pointing off the back of the train. I think this looks awesome, and I really want one. But I also always liked the Energon Omega Supreme mold. With these fixes, I'm curious what you guys think about it, Gog.
I've never actually owned this figure or transformed one, the only thing I know about it is apparently the Omega Sentinel repaint of Energon Omega Supreme is, I guess, the Holy Grail for a lot of people now. It's hard to find or something. Is that correct?
Something. It's not really Holy Grail level, but it's surprisingly expensive.
Okay. So, yeah. So, but it looks neat. It looks like he kind of splits down half and turns into two different vehicles of some sort.
Yep.
Is that true?
Yep.
Yeah. So Yeah, I don't know. I'll pick it. I might pick this up depending on the price. It looks like they're definitely aiming this towards collectors because it comes in a collector's box with a carrying handle and says Transformers Platinum Edition. So
Year of the Snake.
So yeah, this is gonna be interesting. And apparently, he's also getting reissued alongside Energon Optimus Prime, who I guess he can combine with. I've heard. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Basically, you split open Omega Supreme. And you stick Optimus Prime into the cavity in his chest, and rather than Omega Supreme's head, it has Optimus Prime's head.
Oh, how clever.
Yep.
We'll see. I don't know as much about the Optimus Prime. I always thought Energon Optimus Prime looked a little strange. I know that's a wide-held opinion in the community, but I get, you know, all the Fatimus Prime jokes and all that stuff, whatever, but... Mm-hmm. But Omega on his own, he definitely looks interesting. I think the remolds looks good, and it differentiates him from the original toy, pretty far on, I think, in a really good way. So depending on the price, I could see myself picking this up.
And, Seth, how are you feeling about the return of Energon here?
Completely indifferent. Like, but by the time Omega Supreme came out during Energon, I was done with Energon. Like that whole stretch was kind of a dark period for me in collecting. I bought a lot of stuff just because I thought I was supposed to, but I don't care about it at all. That being said, I do think it looks pretty good in this new color scheme, and the big Crushery Claw is pretty cool looking. Still not interested in buying it because it's going to be expensive. It's going to be huge. That is a big ass toy. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking forward to the return of that Optimus Prime because, man, I was tired of Fatimus Prime jokes, and that's just all going to start again.
Whole new generation of fans who are going to think that they're the first one to say it.
Yeah. Now, one thing about that figure that I did think was kind of interesting, like I kind of like how the limb drone vehicles kind of launch out, like, or get flung out of the trailer. The kind of Power Ranger-ness of it, like, because they were all numbered and brightly colored and like, you know, looking back on it, that mold wasn't fantastic. It had a lot of flaws, but I thought that was at least a fun element, like how the trailer worked and the different colored limb drones. But in this color scheme, like kind of bronzy and silvers, and I think it loses that fun element.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like there's something. Unless it's a watermark in the picture. No, because we have two different pictures and clearly taken with different cameras. It looks like something's tampoed on the trailer. I'm guessing that is in some way signifying Year of the Snake.
Couldn't really make it out. I think it's, yeah, it is like their weird little insignia for the Year of the Snake.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how long they keep this up, like this Chinese Zodiac annual Optimus Prime thing. Because we got the Year of the Dragon Prime, Year of the Snake. What's next year? Muskrat?
Muskrat? No idea.
The Weevil?
Year of the Weevil Optimus Prime.
Yeah. So let's see what happens next year.
All right. Yeah, I'm just going to, number one, see if these come out in North American shelves, and number two, much like with Year of the Dragon Prime, who I just saw recently, I'm going to wait for a sale, because I don't think they're going to move super fast.
Well, I'm guessing these must be intended for North America if they're showing them, if they're bothering to show them.
Oh, yeah, this is Platinum Series. I'm just thinking about how they're going to be sold. Like, are they going to be store exclusives, or are they going to be online? Well,
there was something in the news write-up about online exclusives, but limited edition exclusives, special packaging,
Oh, Amazon and BBTS area.
Yeah. Now, is that in reference to these?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Because that's right after they talk about them and right before partnerships. I don't. Okay, so the partnerships, aside from Congress, I hadn't looked at the text yet. I was trying to figure out what the partnerships thing was actually about. Because they showed the Rage of the Dinobots comic book, but then they were like just these big pictures of character art, and it ended with the word Transformers Legends. Apparently, that's a digital game that I'd completely lost track of. I don't really know much about it, unfortunately. I don't know. Have you guys got any opinions on the partnership stuff at the end of the panel? Like, there's the comic book, which is impending, and there's this Legends digital game. I don't know what kind of game it is. I don't know, Gog, any thoughts on this stuff?
No. I honestly haven't had a chance to look at any of that stuff. It just came out, like, earlier this afternoon, and I have not seen any information on it.
Yeah. I was busy working on some post-production all day and missed a lot of this stuff when it came out. Seth, any thoughts yourself on the end of the panel?
Well, having just clicked through the pictures that are apparently digital game pictures, it's like concept art of characters. So, and like all your favorites are here, Soundwave, Green Tank, big insect guy.
I love Green Tank.
All your favorites.
All your favorites. Green Tank, Blue Airplane. that'd be awesome if they started losing character names, and instead of like Thunder Blast, they just started like just straight up naming them what they are. Descriptions: Black Car,
Green Truck Blast.
Yeah, but like, you know, concept art, like some of the pictures look cool, but not knowing what digital game entails, the art can't be that representative. I mean, it's giving you an idea of what kind of characters are in there, but here's Blaster and Eject, or is it Rewind? I can never keep them straight. But what's interesting, in one of them is one of those deluxe Insecticons.
Yeah, Chop Shop.
Yeah, I don't have. Yeah, I was just gonna excuse myself for not having their name straightened out. So that's, you know, that's interesting. That's interesting that Chop Shop is being referenced in something official and not just a third party thing. My guess, and probably by the time this gets out, there'll have been more information and we're all going to sound like a bunch of dummies. Or at least I'm going to sound like a dummy because I'm the one that's actually making guesses about this. If the game is called Legends and Legends are the cheap little toys, I'm guessing this is going to be like a casual game, like either a mobile game or like a Facebook game, which are the worst games ever. Facebook games are awful. Or like a browser-based game or something. I'm thinking it's going to be a small game.
I agree. Calling it quote-unquote digital game makes me think like cell phone card game or, you know, iOS tap the screen every now and then kind of game.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's cool. Maybe it's going to be like Angry Transformers and you're flinging stuff at stuff. But, you know, I can't really comment too much. It's interesting that they're using Chop Chop, though. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I really got for the panel. The only other real main bit of Transformers New York Comic Con stuff I was thinking of was we got no Transformers exclusive this year, as far as I can tell. But if you do want a New York Comic Con Transformer, you can go to Hasbro Toy Shop and get the 2-pack of Taxicab, Bumblebee, and Pink First Edition RC. I think those are still there. That might also be a reason why there is no new New York Comic Con exclusive. Who knows?
But should have just taken them back and tried to sell them again.
Yeah. Those things were great at last New York Comic Con, just for bludgeoning your way through the crowds. Like, get like four of those things in a huge bag and just start swinging it. You can get anywhere you want to go. But, yeah. I guess that means we can move on to some new picture picks. So,
incoming! Oh, wait, that's a different show.
Seth, have you got a new picture pick?
Yeah. Fans Project.
Who?
They are re-releasing Explorer and Munitioner in no colors.
Nani?
So if you're a fan, Project's completist, guess what? You're going to have three each of these guys soon. If you missed them in the past, I recommend getting them because they are awesome figures.
Yes, I agree.
So good. And just from this one picture that we have here right now of them in robot mode, I approve of these color schemes. I really like the not swindle. Looks pretty good in these colors.
It's the G1 toy colors, I believe.
Yeah. Or close to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the second release versions of them. And those had different heads, didn't they? Are these using the original heads again?
Yeah, those are the original heads. The Causality versions had new heads and some other minor remolds as well.
Yeah. I'm going to be considering getting these dudes. Because to get the original heads and because I think the colors are pretty good.
You'll get the combiner parts too.
And I'll get the combiner parts.
Yeah.
And I don't have that figure to combine them with, so it doesn't matter.
Well, these do release in perfect timing with the Hasbro Asia exclusive re-release of the Energon Bruticus box set in more G1-y colors.
Well, something I was just thinking was, if Fans Projects now has three versions of each, that's more than enough to make a set of limbs. Maybe they should develop a central body figure to go with them.
I
just have their own combiner. I mean, they're practically done already.
Yeah, I would not doubt that that's already been a discussion that they've had, especially with them working on their own Menasor as well.
Yeah, they should just go for it, man.
Go for it.
Or at least, you know, with that Menasor, make the connectors compatible.
Oh, the Menasor, I believe, is going to be done through the Causality mini line, so I believe it is going to be very likely having similar connectors.
Compatible, then.
Yeah.
There you go. And then just make your knockoff Bruticus, because you're two-fifths of the way there already. Three times over.
Yeah.
Come on, Fans Project. Do I have to think of everything for you?
Or just purchase an Energon Barricade, and you'll be all set to go.
Nope.
Why not?
Because I don't want to cheapen my official toys with knockoff limbs.
Oh.
Or third-party limbs. They're not actually IP infringing arms and legs. I got a prescription for that.
He got injections into his limbs?
No, it's like the Transformer equivalent of restless leg syndrome. Infringement leg syndrome. Ask your doctor. Side effects include
being expensive.
Laser core warts.
Ew. Yeah, I'm excited about those reissues as well. I really like the look of the colors on Explorer, the little the blast off guy. I also just really like that toy.
They're both really good. They got all kinds of posability.
Mm-hmm.
Explorer, I think his arms are a little short, but, you know, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
He's got short arm syndrome. So your doctor get a prescription.
You may have laser core warts.
Side effects include crotch rust.
It's real vile.
It's way worse than cosmic rust, I tell you that.
Oh, no! Seth, are you at all considering trying to track down the upcoming Asia exclusive Bruticus box set?
No, you keep bringing that up like I'm going to be impressed.
I just like saying Asia exclusive. makes me feel really proud.
Or half proud.
Half proud. That's right.
No, I'm not going to try to track it down. I'm not interested. Stop trying to bring it up.
Okay, but if you consider... It's Asia exclusive. That means it's more valuable.
No, it's gonna lower the price of my original release,
but
that I don't have.
but if you get it, then you know it'll still be a premium piece. It'll justify your ability to get even more expensive shelving units.
I know. I'm gonna have to buy better shelves to hold it up.
Oh, yeah.
You're dragging me into this thing. I was trying not to get involved in. I was trying not to get involved in this because I don't want people coming at me on the boards or on Twitter like, you don't understand what I mean. I'm like, I don't care. I don't collect this stuff for its value. I collect it because I think it's interesting. I'm not interested in value.
Statement.
Fact.
Statement stated. Gog, have you got a new picture pick?
Speaking of fans project.
What?
They, actually, since we've recorded last, they actually have put up Warbot 03 Assaulter up for pre-order and hence shown all the picks that we haven't seen before, including the third vehicle mode, the cruiser mode, and also the kind of assault robot mode with the second head that had long been rumored and discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had my order put in for Assaulter because I think this guy looks rad and I'm really looking forward to him. Got to see him in person at TFCon. I think he's big, heavy looking, awesome, whatever. Everything about him I like so far. We got to see the cruiser mode, which is this. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but there's a lot going on here that reminds me of Macross.
Yeah.
He looks like
they are infringing on Robotech and Transformers at the same time. Double infringement.
Good. Go for it.
Harmony Gold should sue them.
Harmony right. Gold but has it coming.
It looks like the SDF-1 from Macross where it had the two ships on the front. One was called the Daedalus. And I can't remember what the other one was called right off the top.
I only remember the Daedalus because it was part of the Daedalus maneuver.
Correct. The Daedalus attack.
Yeah.
So I can't remember what the other one was called. I feel bad because I used to know it. I actually used to remember that one and couldn't remember the Daedalus, but whatever. So, but it definitely looks a lot like the STF-1 in ship mode. And another cool little Macross-y homage almost. When you put him into his, I think it's called like Incept mode or something. When he kind of, I guess it's like an assault mode into robot mode, but it looks like the face flips up and uncovers this horrifically looking, just red, angry robot face that is in like a permanent growl.
Well, that's his other, basically, is the thing. His two robot modes are basically the two animation models that Broadside had in G1.
Okay.
That's what they're based on.
Okay.
There was actually a lot of confusion I saw. Like, not a ton of confusion, but I was surprised by how much confusion there was about that. Because there was, you know, trying to figure out, like, well, what is this other robot mode? It's like, all it is that in G1 he had two animation models, one closer to the toy and one that inexplicably had a bright red face. And so, on the Assaulter, what they did is basically work both robot modes in so that people who are, for some reason, purist for the red face or purist for the white head with the blue eyes will have the option to choose whichever one they want.
Yeah, but when he's in the red face mode, one thing that I think is really cool is, like in the other mode, it's just he has the part of the clear canopy cockpit on his chest, but in his red faced mode, like, I don't know if you flip it around or how it works. I want to see it in action, but that part actually gets kind of covered up, like the VFs in Macross, where
yeah, the heat shields,
right, exactly. So it's mostly armor because technically the pilot still sits there. It's just that the seat usually rotates to accommodate the new vertical orientation of the the plane, because it's gone from a plane where the canopy sits horizontal to now pointing usually up or down vertically. So the pilot seat will kind of rotate to accommodate the pilot there, but you don't want to have a pilot with a giant glass canopy in the chest, because it's a huge bullseye for the enemy. So there's usually like an armor plating that goes around that when it's in, you know, mecha mode. So, and I don't know, I just thought it was neat. Apparently, I mean, especially because the other mode reminds me so much of the SDF one from Macross. So I think it's cool that the chest there gets the heat shield that is a staple in that series. I don't know. I thought it was cool, but so yeah, I think this guy looks great. Can't wait to get my hands on him. Did they give a date of when he was actually supposed to start shipping?
The date attached to the FPC page,
November
is...
30th. Yeah. I see it. Yeah. Okay.
And pre-orders are also open on Big Bad and TF Source. And that's, I think, answering a long-running question. That and a blog post Fans Project Core did is answering kind of, ever since Steel Core, the long-running question of, so what exactly is Fans Project doing as far as releases? Like, we're still going to work with retailers? Are they doing everything themselves? So Fans Project Core cleared up that they are not Fans Project. They are a very official, that's a new word, a very official-style fan site, pretty much. Like, people who like Fans Project who are working with them, to have like a basically Fans Project sponsored site, but it's not actually Fans Project selling stuff out of their own garage kind of thing.
Right.
And that cleared up, that and Big Bad and TF Source getting Assaulter for pre-order, I think cleared up a whole lot of that of like, okay, so it's just, they have this core site that they can sell stuff through, but they are still selling stuff through retailers as well. Blam. Right. There you go. Yeah, I am super pumped for it. I think it looks great. I got to hold the jet mode at TFCon, and that thing was big and really satisfying. Yeah, I'm ready for it.
Seth, did you get Steel Core?
No.
Okay. Are you getting Assaulter?
I'm very tempted. I'm actually kind of disappointed that this has turned out to be as much of a broadside homage as it has, and like that second face to represent the animation model. It's kind of disappointing, because after Steel Core, I was hoping like this was going to be a continuation of that original kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like the silhouette this guy cuts. Like this one picture that we're seeing where he's holding up his guns, looking all kind of badass. It does kind of look like maybe he's going to be kind of flat-bodied. Like, it doesn't look like there's much beef to his back.
I don't remember what he looked like in profile at TFCon.
Yeah.
His legs and arms have a lot of beef, but I'm not sure about his actual central body.
It'll be disappointing if his torso doesn't have the same kind of burliness to it. But, you know, it's not like a deal-breaker. I mean, I'm going to be looking into the possibility of this dude.
And a small bright side for those who are looking for seeing Fans Project do more original stuff, if it helps at all, because some folks have actually, there's a few posts collecting the history on this guy, but some folks weren't aware. We actually saw Assaulter back in 2009 at TFCon 2009 in a silhouette, like a drawn silhouette form, as part of the Warbot series. He actually has been in development ever since Defender came out. So it's interesting to see him finally
quite a bit different, though, if I remember correctly.
Very different. Yeah. It did not look nearly as beefcake. And that original artwork also, like, the only thing you could really clearly see was that he could flip his head into a, you know, change from a white head to a red head. So it's kind of neat. It's like that whole chapter is kind of like quietly come to a close. That's kind of cool.
Beefcake.
Beef! I feel bad, but I'm going to bring things back to the first party.
Should feel bad.
Yep. But in a very criminal way, because, ladies and gentlemen, stolen Chinese toys are back.
Oh, loudy.
Of the snake.
Oh, loudy. So,
Fall of Cybertron kickback test shot and Starscream test shot. These aren't even stolen Chinese factory samples. These are friggin' test shots cast in turquoise and purple and brown and gray and stuff. These pictures came care of Tech Men, and basically showing how Starscream transforms and what they look like in their close-ups. Starscream, he said that Starscream's transformation is extremely reminiscent of Energon Starscream or Smokescreen from G2. Like that transformation where you easily have a Gerwalk mode, you twist the torso, etc., etc. Apparently Starscream forms quite a beefy and poseable robot. He seems to like him quite a bit. Techmen does not really like Fall of Cybertron kickback. Apparently the robot mode's awesome, but the insect mode is terrible, according to him. Apparently it barely moves. Its curled up legs don't actually straighten out at all. I think from what I can see, the reason behind that is that those legs are extended to look like curled up insect legs, then they compress even further to form the robot mode legs. I think kickback still looks great. Just the head sculpt and the silhouette on him is fantastic to me, so I'm still very interested. But I'm also just kind of like, man, how long has it been since we saw friggin' not just factory samples, but outright test shots? Like, that's cool. And it reminded me, like, I know this came from, like, a board member, and it looks like, upon closer inspection, it was just taken on, like, his desk. I think one of these photos, you could see a Microman Batman in the background. But I was looking at these, and my first reaction was, in 2008, cell phone cameras that any average Joe would have were garbage. So the photos we got were garbage. In 2012, cell phone cameras are all able to shoot in 720p, outright HD video. So, of course, the pictures we get of a stolen test shot would look super clear and pretty. So I was all kind of like digging that weird social paradigm shift, and then I found out it's a board member, and so it's probably like he's able to sit down at home and actually take the photos. And at first I thought these were photos like just taken like on a factory floor. I don't know why. I think it was something about the background made me think it was like in the middle of an assembly factory. And I was like, oh, this guy's a badass. Look what he's doing. And, you know, the rogue factor was kind of stolen away. But nonetheless, they look pretty cool. I'm ready to pick them up. I have a weird relationship with the Fall Cybertron toys. I've got all eight of them now that are released, and I really like them. And they also have tremendous shortcomings. But for some reason, I still like them and almost like them more for being so flawed. It's really weird. So I'm really ready to pick these guys up. GOG as a Starscream oriented collector of Transformers, how do you feel about seeing Fall Cybertron Starscream in a much more detailed view?
So far of all the Fall of Cybertron toys, I think this guy is one of the better looking for sure. I definitely can't wait to get my hands on him. Kickback as well. I don't know. Like the guy mostly says that he feels disappointed with the bug mode of kickback because it's not that poseable, but it's like, I don't know. It's a bug. It's like, so what? So I don't know. We'll see if that's an opinion I share or not. Like he said, it doesn't even look like a bug. And that's really subjective. So, and who knows, I may agree with him completely when it comes out, but I'm kind of taking that with a grain of salt. It just seems like he has a very strong opinion about just the fact that he has a bug mode the way he does.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I mean, I think from what I see, like, I think both Starscream and Kickback look better than the entirety of the first and second wave, honestly, of the Fall of Cybertron guys. I haven't really had much hands on with Bruticus. I briefly messed with the robot modes of because Noise Maze, who lives fairly close to me now. Since my move, I got to briefly handle the robot modes of all the Combaticons. So, and it's like, I'm not like super excited to get him because I have the G2 Bruticus on pre-order from Amazon, which is supposed to ship sometime next month in November. And I mean, I'm keeping him. I'm keeping the pre-order. And the way I look at it is like, if I don't like it, at the very least, I could sell it to somebody at cost and I won't be out of a dime. But I'm going to give it a fair shot. Because I want to like it, and we'll see. And maybe those ridiculous colors will help me appreciate the toys even more. But
The only other, I mean, I've handled all the other ones. I've transformed Jazz at TFCon. I transformed somebody's Optimus at TFCon. And the only one that I actually own is the Shockwave, which, you know, it's like, I don't dislike the toy. I think it's neat. I kept it. I don't want to get rid of it, but like it's, I do feel like there's a lot of really disappointing aspects to the Fall of Cybertron toys as a whole, but everything that I've seen about Starscream and Kickback, at the very least, it makes it look to me like they could very possibly be at least a step or two above all those figures that have come before them so far. So
their thickness looks like a marked improvement so far.
So we'll see. I plan on getting both of these, and I want to give them a fair shot. Unless I hear something in the meantime where everybody that I know and whose opinions that I trust are just telling me, like, dude, this figure is just complete garbage. Don't waste your time. Then at that point, I kind of feel obligated to take those people that I trust at their word. But unless something like that happens, I plan on owning both of these when they come out of retail.
If I were to offer a capsule, it would be that the Combaticons, to me, collectively feel about on par with what I got out of Shockwave. I am in a unique position I've found, or at least a more unique position than most, where I found, oddly enough, like, initially, Shockwave I loved of the first three, but over time I found Jazz and Optimus were more fun to mess with because they just have a little bit more meat on them.
I can see that.
And I found that the Combaticons are somewhere between that. They have Shockwave's weird kind of, like, the whole robot's there, but bits that you kind of take for granted are missing. But then they get some of the beef back in the way that they're able to combine together in multiple different ways, and you can kind of play around with the engineering and then figure some stuff out. So they're interesting. The whole line to me is just really, like, interesting engineering, and they're toys that I enjoy transforming. I just really wish that, and that's why, like, I readily purchased the Repro Label sets for all three Fall of Cybertron toys, because I was like, I like these toys, and I want to do what I can to fill in any of their shortcomings. And it's, I don't know, it's an odd relationship I have with them, because it's, if it was more like other toys that I have just messed with and then put aside, it would have been, I transformed them twice and put them in a box and then literally forgot about them for a while. But these ones, like, I just keep picking them up because something about their engineering is just noticeably fun to me in a tactile way. And it feels like they got the tactile down. It's just the actual display of them is I don't know how to put it right. It's, that's the part that's diminished by the quote-unquote economy with a capital E. Seth, how are you feeling about this? Let's look at these stolen test shots.
I will say though, he talks a lot of trash on the Kickback transformation, and looking at the stock photos that we got, which, you know, Lord knows whether they're right half the time, but his leg transformation is, like, way different than what is pictured in the pictures from Hasbro. And I would say that this is one of the few times I think the Hasbro pre-production pictures actually look way better. Like, his legs are, like, way backwards. So I think maybe a lot of his complaints about the robot mode or the insect mode might be because he has those legs transformed wrong. Kickback has, like, the little grasshopper. You know how grasshoppers have, like, the little hook things on their legs?
Spiky things.
Yeah. So on the Hasbro version, those are facing up. On the pictures that he posted of the test shot, he has those things facing down, so
that's weird.
I think that might have something to do with it. But like I said, I'll see when I get it in hand.
Yeah, I mean, I'll also mention, just in case the gentleman's listening, it's not a slight on you when I keep throwing the word stolen. It's just been so long since I could try to make badass again pre-release Transformers, and what I'm trying to do here is give you some credit, sir. You know, just ride it out, own the situation. Seth, how are you feeling about these kidney level black market ice buckets and bathtubs test shots?
Well, making reference to the first wave of a Fall of Cybertron, I think the Fall of Cybertron designs are good. They do some interesting stuff, being very kind of original while he's still clearly being identifiable as the characters that they're meant to be. But they're a victim of the cost cuttings. I don't find them nearly as interesting as you seem to, Vangelis.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah, I don't. No. I don't get a good tactile feel, like, especially from the Prime. The Prime one, just the plastic just felt cheaper than normal to me. Just the texture, like, touching it, just, I don't know, just seemed cheap. But now talking about these two, a Starscream looks very accurate to his in-game model. Unfortunately, I've never really been a fan of Starscream's in-game model. There's just something about his silhouette in vehicle or in robot mode, going back to the first game, that just, it, I don't know, the proportions just don't seem right to me. His legs seem too chunky. I don't know. I just never really been much a fan of this Starscream design, but they seem to have done a good job making the toy look like it. I'll probably end up getting it just because. Kickback, though, I don't know if I'll get it. I'm just not that impressed. Didn't they have Kickback in the case at BotCon, or was that a different?
No, I want to say they had both in the case at BotCon.
Yeah, and I remember even then thinking, like, you know, bug mode just kind of looks like a mess. And it even if this guy didn't get the legs pointing in the right directions, I think for the most part it still kind of looks like a mess. The robot mode does have, like, a cool, sleek... I would say it's kind of interesting in that, like, the robot mode has this cool, sleek, smooth, like, really kind of Japanese mecha look to it, while the insect mode has, like, it's more spiny, more kind of crazy looking. So that's at least interesting that it could change in that way visually, but yeah, I'm just not getting excited by it. It's just not activating much. Like, and even the Starscream, who I'm not really all that fond of, like, the step-by-step pictures kind of demonstrating the transformation makes it seem more interesting. So, I don't know, just Kickback's just not activating that thing in my brain.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we'll see how they look when they're in actual colors, and maybe it will look awesome in actual colors, and I'll go, you know what, I'll get it anyway.
As long as I get my tactile thing.
Yeah.
I do mean more so just, like, the act of transforming. The plastic on them is definitely, like, especially on, I found, especially on Shockwave and Optimus, the plastic feels really weird. Jazz's, like, fake ratchet joints somehow fill that gap in for me a little bit, but I also find his fake ratchet joints really odd. And Vortex has some of those fake ratchet joints on his knees, and they're weird. Anyway, that's our new picture pick section. I have a listener question from Cyber Monkey.
Monkey.
Yes, Cyber Monkey.
Monkey.
Who says, hello to all hosts and any potential guests. So he's saying hello to just the entire world. I have a curiosity that I would enjoy having satisfied. It's a great way to ask a question. Question one. This may be more evangelist than everyone, I'm not sure. Where did the idea to use MP4 format with chapter markings and images come from? And where, why did you get the idea for an intermission? Seems like an odd idea for a show that's being listened to at our leisure, but I love the randomness gets thrown in there. I can't answer that very easily. The chapter markings and images came from the, I forgot what it's called, the Somethingth World. It was basically the most popular Heroes podcast, which I was listening to back in 2007, they had chapter markings and chapter images, and I really liked it. So I wanted to do that in a podcast if I ever did a podcast, and so I did. What was it? It's named after the comic book in Heroes, like the 10th World or something? The 4th World? I can't remember. But that's where that came from. As for the intermissions, I want to say those came about in order to let us basically take a break halfway through the recording and refresh ourselves, because if I recall, we had a few times where we would just try gunning all the way through the recording really early on, and by the time we hit, like, what we got, we would be, like, just a gigantic mess. Like,
I think it turned into that eventually, but I think the reason why it started is because we were flip-flopping hosts, and it was... The first time we did it, it was I remember you saying, like, if anybody who's not on this week wants to do an intermission, that way it would give us an opportunity to kind of do something not on the recording but still be a part of it.
Oh, that too, right, because we were doing more of our own produced intermissions then when we were all, like, full of that youthful vigor. I will say, by the way, last week's intermission accomplished what I wanted it to accomplish, because if you don't know, last week's intermission was the argument clinic from Monty Python's Flying Circus.
What?
And I am someone who basically, ever since high school, has had no tolerance for Monty Python references because everyone did it back in high school and in even my early 20s, people I was around. Like, I would just get sick of it. Like it would be like, hey, Monty Python reference, I'm sick of it. Because I was just done with it. I was like, everyone has referenced it to the point where referencing it is like saying nothing at all. But then, for some reason, last week, it seemed thematic, and I was like, I'm going to stick it in there. And then I was thinking to myself, I was like, it's been so long since I heard anyone reference Monty Python. I wonder if anyone will actually not know what this is. And then I actually got one Twitter message from a listener, and I actually was really grateful for this message, because a listener who said that they really liked the intermission and wanted to know what it was from. And I suddenly felt completely at peace with the world for a few minutes, because I was like, there are people in the world in 2012 who don't know what Monty Python is. That means that they won't be sick of it. And they're going to be discovering this massive number of hours of really well-done entertainment. And I felt really good all of a sudden. So there's that. But anyway, yeah, intermissions, like, you know, if you think of any classics, there were the ad spots I did for subforums. There was Gog Dog's Journal. There have been there have been things like, oh, I mean, they still happen when we have like a big wait, what is it called? It's when you do the news thing. You know, you and the other Chris.
Oh.
What's it called? Oh.
Random BS that probably isn't true.
Yes. Yeah, so there's stuff
we
like that.
We haven't done one of those in a while. But I try to only do those when it's inspired, because otherwise it would get really dumb really quick.
And that's why the post-produced intermissions, I think, sort of died off on my end, because it hit a point where I didn't want to just force them to happen. Like, have this, like, this weird, like, an hour or two went into it, little 30-second bit that I didn't even really like. So I forgot what episode we did it, but I changed my stance of we must make everything heard on the podcast, and then just started putting in bits from YouTube.
Well, I had suggested, to save time, that another podcast I was listening to was starting to put into the middle of their show when they were taking a break, like, audio from old commercials.
Yes! That's what it was.
And then I suggested using Transformer commercials, and we did that for a little while until we ran out of commercials.
Yeah, apparently there's finite Transformers commercials. And then
because we were doing intermissions back when, because originally we were limited software-wise to the episode had to be like
66
an hour
minutes.
And 15 minutes or something.
It was 66.
66 minutes. So we had to be our show was barely allowed to be an hour long. So there was no reason for us to take a bathroom break because it was usually over before it began. Mm-hmm. Since then, now that the shows are significantly longer than that, the intermission has kind of served that purpose for us, kind of unintentionally later on, but it's something that we are sometimes thankful for.
Yeah, and those breaks are usually really short and not like a whole nother conversation.
Oh yeah,
especially in 2:19. Especially,
yeah, that was the shortest one ever. Like, we barely paused long enough to breathe.
So I heard.
You have no idea what we're talking about. Stop trying to act like you know.
No, I listened through that part. I'm participating.
Part of that part.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, that's why I said, so I heard. Because I heard it on the podcast.
That was kind of mean, Seth.
Yeah.
Everybody knows he wasn't here. You don't have to, like, you don't have to talk him down.
Yeah. Making me feel small.
Yeah. And take some of the wind out of your sails.
You have no idea how big these lungs are. I can blow this hot air as long as I want to.
Take it down a peg. It's about time. It's about time somebody stood up to you.
Someone did stand up to me. It was the gigantic friggin' centipede that flew out from under my chair right before we started.
He's one of my agents.
He's got a little radio on.
Beast Saga Centipede Man. Seth sent him.
Oh.
Man, it's just the speed. If it came out slowly and slowly walked towards my bed, it would be different. It was just like the combination of a giant shape moving that fast.
Well, you have that many legs and try to move slow.
Well, you know, you gotta. If it's that big, it should be mature by now. It should have some self-control. Anyway.
It's living wild, man. It's living life with reckless abandon.
And I even keep, like, I don't know. I'm just glad. Under my bed, it's like four stackable storage containers. And it's just like two stacks of two.
Yeah.
So it's not like... Yeah.
It's four stackable storage containers and an army of centipedes.
Well, that's the thing, right? I don't have to worry about centipedes living in my stuff. I pull out my two sealed stackable storage containers and I see the centipede army and I'll be like, all right, that's good. I can just, you know, take this aerosol can and this match and just burn the entire floor.
Well, I know what happens when you find a dead spider, like, in a drawer. What happens when you find a dead curled-up centipede?
Nothing good, basically. Nothing good.
You find a dead curled-up centipede, that's a warning from the other centipedes.
Yeah, centipedes, they don't look quite as, like, vulgar when they're dead. Spiders just manage to look really unpleasant when they're dead. I mean, I had this conversation already. Yeah. If they could shout... They would scream in our ears before they die. I think centipedes would just engage us in a duel of honor. I think a centipede is like the gentleman of the insect pest world.
No, centipedes bum rush you, zigzagging through mushrooms, breaking into smaller pieces, and they never stop coming until you destroy every segment individually.
It took me a second. Actually, I was really confused by both the mushrooms and the breaking apart into smaller pieces, but I caught on. I'm back. Question number two. Do you ever feel the show has influenced your spending? For example, do you feel you have bought figures on or off topic just so you would have something for what we got this week? Yes, we all have done that. None of us, I think, ever feel good about it either afterwards. No. And furthermore, many of you have bought yourselves better headsets or mics, or even more audio equipment. Is this stuff you would have considered were it not for the show?
No.
In my case, no. I would not have... I mean, I got a good microphone, and I didn't use a good audio source for videos until I got the Zoom last year. So I think I would have just not had, like, this level of quality audio until I had my Zoom last year. Then I would have had the big epiphany. And I would still be using a Skype recorder to do all this stuff, and everything would be simple. But yeah, I have bought figures, so I would have something to talk about. I've stopped doing that ever since, I want to say, like a year or so ago. And then whenever I catch myself thinking about it, I then stop thinking about it, because I'm like, what we got this week is going to have everyone else having toys to talk about. If I don't have a toy to talk about, that just means it's a simpler segment, and I can concentrate more on what other people are talking about. But yeah, I would not have this soundboard or this condenser mic, I think. I would probably have a good USB headset by now instead, which would be, you know, middle ground on quality. But, Gog, what about you? How much money has this podcast cost you?
I've definitely, when I've had headsets die, have spent money on better headsets because, like... The very first headset that I used when we first started doing this was awful in that if I even so much as, like, cringed up my nose because my nose itched, it would make this horrible plastic squeaking noise on the side of my head. And I just remember looking at my audio file while we were recording those first few episodes, and it was just like, wow. Like, every time I so much as blink hard, it's just all sorts of, like, plastic-on-plastic noise. And it would just get shot right into the microphone. There was nothing I could do to avoid it. I would have to mute every time I'd so much as turn my head hard. I bought nicer headsets since then and would even test them out beforehand just to make sure that they were something that I would want to use for recording. And after several months ago of just finally hitting my limit with headsets altogether after the infamous Turtle Beach incident, where I had multiple Turtle Beach headsets of the same model continue to fail over and over again with the same problem, even after returning them and getting new ones. I finally just had gotten really sick and tired of USB headset cords dying from me using them every week, and just eventually bought myself the Blue Yeti condenser USB microphone, which I'm still using, don't have any problems with. So, yeah, I've definitely spent lots of money on recording equipment for the podcast. I mean, nothing like incredibly expensive. Like, I don't have like a recording studio or anything, but it's influenced my purchasing of that stuff easily. You can listen to, you can tell when podcasts record like using microphones that are still built into the laptop. Sometimes you can get away with that, but it's not the way I want to sound. And I also think that it's really important for all the hosts in a podcast to sound consistently good together, because if you have one guy that sounds great and one guy that sounds like he's talking through a tin can, it's not great. And we've been there before, and I've gotten comments saying like, how come so-and-so on your show sounds awesome and so-and-so on your on your podcast sounds like he's talking through like a rotary phone from the 50s. And I'm like, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, whenever I get that comment, I just tell people, like, the guy who doesn't sound good, just get on his case, because there's only so much we can say.
But I think we've come a long way in that department over the 4 years plus we've been doing that, and it's pleasing to me as well, just from a pride issue with the show.
And so much thanks to things like the Blue Yeti for coming into existence over the last 4 years too. Like, the fact that condenser quality sound can now be had for $99 is, to me, like, that's unthinkable back in 2008.
Right. In the end, we edit the podcast down to a small bit rate, so most of that quality is lost anyway, but at the very least, everyone sounds fairly consistent, and that's still a very good thing.
And it's, even though it does go down to like a 48 kbps, like, I find that the best parts of a condenser sound are the ones that survive through that kind of crushing down. Like just the really good clean mid-range, the lack of hiss and stuff like that, all that stuff still survives even being crushed down to 48 kilobytes per second.
Yeah. And have I ever bought anything for what we got this week? My answer is much the same as Chris, in that, yes, I used to do that all the time. I was like, oh, I got to have something to talk about this week. And I have, since then I've stopped, and it's very pleasing to say, now, just for when he says, do you have anything to talk about? Just like, nope. And just move on. Just keep the show going.
You don't have to try to come up with
padding it out, I think, is just not good. And then in the end, you've just bought something that you didn't even want anyway. Because if you've only bought it to have something to talk about, that's exactly the problem that I've been trying to solve in my spending habits for the last several years. So,
and you end up, when you try talking about it, all you have to say is, well, I bought it so I could talk about it. I don't really like it.
Yep, exactly. And it's not particularly interesting. So, on the other hand, I mean, I still, like, if I have a package and it's supposed to come, like, the day we record, and it doesn't, I feel pretty bummed, because
then
I have to wait 2 weeks to talk about it, especially if it's, like, a brand new figure that just came out, and I got it, but it came, like, the day after we record, and then some moron like Aaron gets it, like, a week later, but gets to talk about it before me. That's kind of it's that friendly competition where you're just like, damn it, like, I got it before he did, and he gets to talk about it first out of all of us. But you know, so there's still a little bit of immaturity in that regard there, but it's all friendly. But as far as just straight up buying something because I don't have anything else to talk about, like, yeah, that stuff used to happen, but it's not anymore. Like, I would just assume to say, nope, got nothing. Let's move on.
My little follow-up question to you guys, I'll go with Seth first, because you answered so fast on that one. out of memory, what's one of the most regretful purchases toy-wise you've made just for the sake of having something to talk about? Like, if you can remember any of the ones that didn't go too well.
Oh, I mean, like, all of the early Legion scale figures or Legend scale figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it was like, oh, I don't have anything, and I don't have this one yet, and it's the cheapest thing here. Because now I'm not just buying something that I don't really want, but I'm buying something because it's cheap.
Yeah.
And it's like, ugh. But, like, I totally agree with what GOG was saying about when you have something coming that you actually wanted, and it doesn't make it in time, it's like, oh, what a bummer, because this is something I wanted. And I do kind of start feeling kind of rotten. Well, not rotten, but I feel kind of lame when, you know, it's like 3 episodes in a row. So it's been like a month and a half and I don't have anything on topic. And then it's just like, oh, man, like, when are the messages going to start coming in of like, oh, you're going to fan anymore? It's like, ah, shut up. There's nothing good out. I'd rather wait and just be off topic for a while than just buy stuff I don't really have an interest in. Spoiler, I'm coming back to on topic this week.
Whoa.
But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head for the show that I bought that I regret having, like, deeply regret having purchased. But, like, when I was still doing Them Funny Robots, I was doing that crap a lot. I was just, like, going to Kmart, just looking at what was on the shelf and going, I guess I could make fun of this one. $10. So I can make a joke once and then never touch it again. And, like, that's part of my hard feelings toward that whole trilogy, Cybertron, Energon, and all that, because that's, like, the era when I was doing that the most. Just buying stuff for the sake of having a thing. And now I just have all these things that I didn't really want in the first place. So yeah, there's that whole deal.
Yeah, in my case, I think the most regretful things are when I couldn't find any Transformers, so I saw a figure for off topic that I otherwise probably wouldn't have had interest in. I managed to drum up like a sliver of interest, like, well, I can talk about it on the podcast and just pick it up.
That's even crazier if you're buying off-topic things just to talk about.
This is when I went through my period of randomly just buying 25th anniversary G.I. Joes, who I would open up and then put on a shelf and forget about for literally a year and a half. That's why I've really gotten away from G.I. Joes, aside from like really specific stuff like zombie vipers, because I'm like, G.I. Joes are so dangerous to me in that, like, I actually don't really care about a majority of the characters or their designs, but I like the idea of the figures. And so I like some of the figures a lot, but then I'll go like, well, I don't have this one yet, and I got so many others, let's just get this one too. And then I have, like, Army Man with Rocket Launcher. And I know he's probably got, like, a character, and he's got aspects people really like, but to me, I lose interest. Like, a great example. Great characters, but I was really pumped when I found the 25th anniversary, what's their name? It's the dude with the dog, Junkyard?
Yeah.
Junkyard Mutt?
Yeah.
I was like, these are so cool. And I got them home, and then, like, after about 48 hours, I was looking at it again, and I was like, I really don't care about this toy, and I don't know what to do with it. So I put it with all the other G.I. Joes I don't know what to do with. And, yeah,
well, that's... He's a real American hero, not a real Canadian hero, so
I know. It's
understandable if you can't dig.
If I see Ice Cream Soldier again, I'll get him, because he's crazy.
There's been a couple of shows where I didn't have anything either on or off topic, and those actually kind of felt a little good.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like a week went by and I didn't buy anything.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, he's playing Halo 3 in the background, or Halo Reach, so he doesn't have to be disturbed from his game.
What are you talking about?
I'm not exaggerating.
What are you talking about?
I'm just saying, like, on weeks where what we got this week went really long and you didn't have anything to talk about, there's been plenty of times where you've played games in the background and it probably worked in your favor that you didn't have to be disturbed.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I've done that at times when I lose interest in the what we got off topic stuff, and everyone else is really into talking about it. I kind of just try to listen in to see if anyone stops talking, but I'll like I'll be like, well, I don't have anything to offer to this, and I'm not going to go like, I don't care, stop talking, and like just cut it off. But I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna check my email.
It's actually been quite a long time since I've played a game during a show.
Not for me. I'm doing it right now. No,
are you playing XCOM?
No, I haven't got anything to play.
Did you get Borderlands?
I need to get Borderlands. Okay, I'll ask you. I keep asking people. So should I just skip Borderlands 1? Should I just skip it?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with Borderlands 1. Borderlands doesn't have like a complex story like at all.
Yeah.
It's a series of missions that kind of, with a very thin narrative. When the Borderlands 1 characters reappear in 2, it will be less meaningful. It's just going to be like some crazy dude that you're getting missions from.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay. I don't think you're going to be missing out that much. And a lot of the fun with Borderlands is playing with other people. And good luck finding people playing the original Borderlands.
I'll put a call out on Twitter. Hey, guys.
Yeah. People are playing 2. That's where the people are.
Yeah.
Just go to 2. And then maybe later, if you're interested, go back to 1.
Yeah, I think over
don't
the next...
get Mad Moxie's DLC.
Oh, I heard about awful. That.
That killed the original Borderlands for me. I was done. I couldn't play it anymore after Mad Moxie's. Mad Moxie's was so awful.
I'm hoping to, in the next 2 months, once I finish up school, I'm probably going to binge on some games. I am going to be playing Dishonored for sure. And Borderlands 2 is on my short list. That's right. Who needs honor? Canada. We have one more question from Cyber Monkey. Who says, who would win in a fight? Nah, I'm just messing with you. I'm not a fan of those questions either.
Moon Racer.
...
I would win.
My final question is, if you could pass any advice back 4+ years to when you started doing the podcast, what would it be?
Stop buying crap you don't really want.
stop buying crap for the sake of the show. Get a better mic right now, or wait until in a few years the Blue Yeti comes out, and don't force it. Don't force the podcast. Just let it happen. But the thing is, if we go back and tell ourselves those things 4 years ago, we'll never accrue the experience to know those things, and we'll cause a temporal paradox. So we shouldn't do that.
My advice would be go back in time and say, hey, Chris, let someone help you with the editing.
Well, yeah, that would be a good idea to do that before what... what episode was it, like 160-something?
167, I think, was my first one.
Yeah. Yeah, that would also be a good idea.
I would go back in time and tell myself to bet on these sporting events.
And then you'd...
a list of sporting events.
Then you'd break your cane, the head of your cane off in the time machine. And call someone a butthead.
Yep.
Excellent. Yep. Yeah.
Tell myself to make like a tree and leaf.
And get out of here.
Do you want to be my pal that wears the blue and red 3D glasses to the diner?
I want to be the Chinese guy from the future Biff gang.
I just want to ask somebody if he's yellow.
I'm pretty sure there was a Chinese guy in the future Biff gang. He had like spiky hair.
It seems weird that there would be Chinese people in the future.
That's true. We breed. What? Cyber Monkey goes on to say, thanks for all the great shows and hours of entertainment, especially when, at the time of this writing, you'll all have such busy and hectic lives. Signed, Cyber Monkey. And then he says, Monkey is pronounced monkey.
Oh, thank you, Cyber Monkey. You're so sweet.
I like monkey better.
Monkey. And I think that third question, that goes on to, if you're going to start a podcast now, you can draw on the experience of others. Get a Blue Yeti if you really want to do it, or get a USB headset if you just want to try it out. And then just let it happen and be prepared to fail.
Yeah, like podcasting hadn't been around too long when we started.
Yeah.
Like it was a thing. There were people, you know, doing it. Some people were doing it well. Some people weren't. We were kind of coming in near the ground floor. We weren't exactly like, we weren't the first wave, but we were close. Now podcasting is so big. Like, starting now, you could start at a much higher level.
Yeah.
Without much more cost or effort than what we were putting into it originally. It's kind of like, I remember seeing an interview with Tony Hawk, and he said something that I thought was interesting. It's not like super profound. It's not like you're not going to put this on a bumper sticker and live your life by it. But he was talking about kids learning to skate now compared to when he was learning to skate. And like the basic tricks he started learning that led to the next level of tricks that led to the third level of tricks. And that third level was like the most crazy stuff you could possibly do. Like that third level of trick is what kids today are starting on. That's their first level. Like they skip all the stuff that he worked up through and go straight to the advanced stuff. And I think that's kind of where we are with podcasting. Like you could skip this huge early segment of how all this stuff gets done and go right to a higher level.
Absolutely. That's why, and I don't get angry about it, but I find I get a bit snippy when someone's like, we want to start doing a podcast. Can you tell me how you record your Skype call? And I'm kind of like, if all you're going to do is record your Skype call, I would implore you to consider a more quality oriented option at this point in time, because a Skype recorded podcast is not going to stand out in any way unless there is a massive quality of chemistry between your hosts.
It just sounds like a phone call recorded.
Yeah. And in 08, I thought, you know, that's a neat idea. But nowadays I really have little patience for it. Like it's the easiest way to do it. And if you just want to see if chemistry works, you know, by all means do it. But
no, the easiest way to do it is to do it with people that you could do it in the same room with.
Second easiest way to do it is to record a Skype call.
Right.
I agree with you there.
But I would say ideally you would be doing it with people that you could do it in the room with.
Yeah. And I don't know. Audacity is free. Audacity is a multi-track editor. And if you, I mean, your podcast will just sound a million times better with no experience needed other than just the extra bit of work going in and doing that, just multi-track edit it. So I wish more people would readily do that. Because Skype recorded podcasts, sometimes you hear an excellent conversation happening in one of them that gets marred by packet loss or Skype's natural thing where it dips people's voices down underneath other ones by trying to judge who is speaking louder. And it's just, I don't know, it comes off not feeling very awesome to me. Anyway, that's our listener question from Cyber Minky.
Minky.
You know what? I got some voicemails from GOG. I could crack open one of those voicemails.
I just have one other piece of advice if anybody listening is thinking of starting a podcast. Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you need to jump in and do 3-hour long episodes like we're doing. We've built our way up to this.
Yeah. Yeah. We started off at an hour six.
Yeah. Try to stay on focus. Become long. Don't think you need to start long.
Well,
there's a lot of really great podcasts that are still an hour and under. Like, it depends on your topic and it depends on what you're trying to cover, of course. But
that really goes into just the whole thing of don't force it. Just do what happens naturally.
Yeah.
And listen, be prepared for it not to work.
A lot of different podcasts. Like, listen to a bunch of different topics. Because, you know, like, the way a lot of these toy shows, like ourselves, Pre-Order 66, Moonbase, Canadian Slag, so on and so forth. We kind of have, you know, our formats are a little different from show to show, but you know, there's kind of a lot of similarities. But then you listen to like Smodcast or Bill Burr's Monday Morning Podcast or the Rooster Teeth Podcast or Giant Bomb. Like, they have very different formats and styles. And there's a lot of different ways to come at this idea. Like, just like, you might listen to us and you might like what we do, but this isn't the only way you could do it. And if you figure out a different way to do it, you might end up being more interesting to listeners because you do sound different than everybody else.
Giant Bomb has, you know, at least once opened with like 40 minutes of total off topic, which I loved. And I was like,
oh, just this week is like that. There's a huge long opening this week of Vinnie Caravella and his traveling problems with the baby.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
And I was like, imagine if we did that, given like all of the trials and tribulations we've gone through with what we got this week. Yeah. We just opened with like almost an hour of us not talking about Transformers.
No, just that couple of minutes about Seth Buzzard 1, I'm sure, is going to aggravate somebody. I hope it aggravates Seth Buzzard 1.
Anyway, I've got a voicemail here from listener and con compatriot Mirai Baby. Let's crank this up. And let's see if this plays properly.
Hey, yo, Vangelis and your band of Vangelisepticons. My name is Mirai Baby of the TFW 2005 boards. Also, a quick plug from my own website, transcostumers.com. And I have a quick question for y'all regarding something you may or may not have thought about. If you could create and wear a costume of any Transformer, who would it be and why? And if you have any knowledge in the area of costuming at all, what would you create your rig out of? Thanks for taking the time to answer my questions. Hope to hear from y'all soon. Click.
Yeah, that's right. That's a proper click. let's see. Costume. I actually think the idea of putting on a really high end, really cool looking costume is like one of the best things in the world. So I don't know, man. I'd want to just dress up like someone who looks like a badass or something huge. Like I'd love to wear like a Bruticus costume, like have just like a giant helicopter rotor on one shoulder and like big ass cannon sticking up off my back or something like that. As for what it would be made of, my knowledge of scratch building robot costumes is extremely limited, mostly to stuff I've learned from Mirai Baby's costume journals, designer journal type things on the website aforementioned. So I don't know. I'd have to defer to that. I'm guessing like I'd need to build a pretty solid frame underneath that thing to even be able to walk around in it. And given another conversation we had some years ago, not make it out of solid fiberglass because that would shatter my body inside the costume.
Well, do you remember that BotCon when you and I, we were going to like run back to the hotel or something like that, and we were stopped in our tracks by that huge Devastator that came strutting along with his arm swinging?
Yeah, friggin' like Grimlock just came around the corner. And we're like, it's on!
That was my... I just love the way the arms are swinging on that thing. You just come around or just swinging on.
I don't care about anything.
We're just like, what the... Oh my god!
And that's one of the things I like about giant robot costumes, because like no matter what level of craftsmanship they have, unless it's like total trash, there's always going to be at least that first moment of like, whoa, look at that. That's my answer. I don't want to be friggin', I want to ride the trend. I just want to be Bruticus. I want to be like 15 feet tall and have a huge voice modulator so I can scream at people. It'd be great. Seth, what kind of costuming would you do?
You know, maybe this is going to sound weird because I've been on and off again trashing on Energon and all those shows. But like a kicker, set of kicker armor. Like, I actually like that design. Like, say what you will about the character, but I like the design of that suit of armor.
It's kind of Tekka Man. In a way, yeah, and the visor.
And, and I would prefer to be, like, if I was going to cosplay something from Transformers, I think I would be looking more toward the human end characters than a Transformer. Like, I've seen some pretty incredible Transformer costumes, but I just don't know if I would want to be one of the Transformers.
You've got to be able to carry it in a certain way. That to me, this isn't even contained to costuming. This is just, you know, even in movies, like dudes in elaborate costumes in general. If you can't live the costume and move in a way that suits the costume, no matter how good it looks, if you just start like walking around with your shoulders slung and kind of glancing at people, you're just going to look like some dude in a costume, and it's not going to work. So it's got to be livable too. Like, perfect example.
If I'm going to live it, then I have to be a huffer.
Oh yeah, just walk around in a huffer costume, just glaring at people,
complaining about like whatever. Like,
my backpack's so
another
heavy.
Another line.
I think that would actually be a really fun way to solve the problem of BotCon lines being boring. So just dress up in a huffer costume and walk up and down the line complaining. Gog, what about you? Who'd you dress up as?
If I was to choose a costume, it would have to be something that I could, that would transform, but it would be something that you had no idea was a costume, so you could just turn into a humanoid shape and scare the ever-living piss out of someone.
That would be awesome!
Like have a, like, almost like a, maybe like a ghillie suit that looks like it's just garbage, like crumpled up papers and stuff in a corner, and so someone is like standing next to you talking to someone, and it looks like just somebody dumped a garbage can in the corner, and then you pop up next to them and make them piss their pants. Like, I don't know, like, or I don't know, like, so what else could you do? Like, so maybe look like an end table. Like, you could look like an end table, and somebody's sitting there next to you, and you just pop up, and your head pops out of it, and they're just like,
I remember seeing a hidden camera video of a person dressed as a chair, and then like grabbing people when they sat on them. I think it was like from some German TV channel or something, but
that's kind of awesome. I actually saw this is only kind of in line with that, but I was taking a look. I was trying to look up videos when I was doing research for my panel at TFCon, and I found there's a guy who made it's a really tall movie Bumblebee suit, and it's like the way it's built reminds me of the power loader from Aliens. In that the guy is inside this like metal frame that he's building to look like Bumblebee, and he's got like these individual finger levers attached to his hand that work the bigger fingers on the huge Bumblebee hand and stuff like that. And it can also, through like a very specific way of him like basically curling up in the fetal position, can turn into a little kind of car. And so a lot of costume people at conventions will do skits, which is something that I don't think ever really caught on at BotCon, because I think BotCon is still trying to get used to the idea of costumes and, you know, things that aren't dioramas and whatnot. And someone did a skit with this guy in the Bumblebee costume, and what they did is they just had a skit happening with a whole bunch of really chintzy-looking cardboard furniture everywhere, and then this really weird, funny-looking Bumblebee car just chilling out. So it just looked like the Bumblebee car was a doofy little miniature car they made for the sake of the set of their skit. And at one point, the car just freaking, like, stood up and turned into a robot, and the crowd detonated, because I think that nobody saw a guy inside that car until it stood up. So they're like, oh, it's a funny-looking little cardboard car. Then it gets up and has, like, a big metal armature inside, and the crowd's like, whoa! So that answer made me think of that. That dude apparently met Seth Green at a convention, and tried to hang out with him in his giant Bumblebee costume, and there's some video up of Seth Green going like, it's a Bumblebee costume, and Seth Green has like this posse, and it was really weird.
Not to be confused with the Seth Green 1 on Twitter.
That's right. Seth Green 1 wears his cowboy boots to
synagogue.
To synagogue. Yeah, and either of you guys, have you got? Do you have any ideas on if you were to somehow have those costumes, like what formats you would use to build them? Rig is a term I actually just learned this last year from Mirai Baby's breakdown costume and the aforementioned journal attached to it.
Yeah, I had I had stumbled across an eBay auction. A dude was selling a Miles Mayhem helmet.
Oh my god!
That they had made. Yeah, and I was just like, oh my god, Miles Mayhem helmet! And then she replied, you don't want that. It's made of fiberglass. It's going to weigh a ton, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know anything. I just think it looks awesome. I'm not actually going to buy it anyway, because it was like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
And,
no, that's...
It looked like Miles Mayhem's helmet, and it was And there was a picture of a dude wearing it. It might have been the dude wearing it in, like, some cosplay parade. And he had, like, the full-on Miles Mayhem outfit. And I was like, oh, man.
Was he drinking a Caucasian?
Huh?
Never mind.
But I thought, oh, man, I would totally cosplay Miles Mayhem if I was going to cosplay somebody.
That'd be such a perfect suit to do. He's got to get, like, an admiral's, like, you know, his weird little, like, I'm a helicopter pilot, evil admiral man thing. And just get, like, a helmet and put it on. Walk around and point at people.
Yeah. So what I learned from that is apparently you don't want to use fiberglass.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's about all that I know. So, but like if I was going to have like a kicker suit, which I'm never threatening to actually have, but like, I guess whatever plastic that like the Stormtrooper Star Wars guys use, I guess that's what I would
do. I read a tutorial on how to do that once. You can apparently make a vacuform mold system to make Stormtrooper armor using an oven and a vacuum cleaner. Apparently it's very unsafe, but you can do that.
You know, something I've said a few times now was, like, if I were to ever become rich, like, winning the lottery or, like, a multi-millionaire relative that nobody knew about picking me at random to leave their money to when they die, I would have the most insane, like, arsenal of prop weapons, and stuff like that would be included. Like, I would totally make a Miles Mayhem helmet happen to be in my crazy arsenal.
Well, there's the dude in the Iron Man costume that has, like, working opening flaps and, like, a mechanical operating, like, retracting faceplate.
Yeah, but part of that is I don't want to make any of this stuff myself.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Like, I would get one of those British dudes that build Daleks to build me a Dalek, and a dude that builds R2-D2s to build me an R2-D2.
I saw a Dalek with a guy operating it from the inside at Con-G in January, and it was the best because it had a loudspeaker attached to the guy inside, and then when people wouldn't get out of the way of the Dalek or they didn't know it was coming up behind them, he'd wait for a few seconds, and if they didn't move, he'd just start screaming at them from inside the Dalek suit.
Yeah, well, duh. What else are you going to do when you're inside a Dalek suit?
It's fantastic, because
you're not in character if you're not screaming at people. That's all that they do.
I saw some people legit jump because they didn't know he was trying to come up behind them and get through them. Like, you know, they were filling up a hallway, and he's trying to get to an elevator. And he just started barking orders in a Dalek voice. It was great.
Get away with it, too, because everyone just goes, oh, look at that, he's crazy. And then you could say all kinds of awful things to people, and they don't get mad.
Yeah. Or that little R2-D2 that picked a fight with me and Ian at TFCon. That thing friggin', like, ran into my leg, and part of its shell blasted off the side of its leg. And I felt really bad for a second, until I found out the controller specifically was trying to hunt me and Ian down with it.
Wow, what a jerk.
It was funny.
But yeah, bottom line is, I mean, I'm going to need to pay somebody to do this stuff for me because I'm not interested in making any of this stuff myself.
Well, Gog, you mentioned a ghillie suit made of garbage. That sounds like you could just really just grab a ghillie suit and start stapling garbage to it.
Yeah. I think that was a dual purpose answer.
Yeah. Just brief, in case people are wondering about the fiberglass thing. Basically, Mirai Baby was making a jazz costume using automotive techniques, and was making it out of fiberglass, and about, I believe, halfway or two-thirds of the way through, realized the costume not only weighed more than she was physically able to have attached to her body, but if she was wearing that costume and then fell down, the costume would survive the fall at the expense of her actual body inside the costume, which would have been fractured in multiple places. So that's where the fiberglass thing derives from. Anyway, thank you for the voicemail, Mirai Baby. We are going to take a break, and then we'll be back with what we got this week here on WTF at TFW.
Love is here, 命のある限り君は dream of love 守り続けていく 戦士たち立ち上がれ一つになれ Get wild 暗闇に解き放つ勇気の炎絶対諦めない心に変わるささいバトル Love is here未来を信じてていつまでも
Legit. That was a quick break. We're back on WTF at TFW with what we got this week. Starting off with on-topic stuff. What Transformers we got this week. Seth Buzzard, I want to know what Transformers you got this week.
Did you pick me first because I was taunting you that I was going to eat food?
Yep.
While you were just hungry.
Yep.
All right.
Well, also because I know you've got on-topic stuff.
Yeah, I got on-topic stuff. You totally just... stole my thunder.
You spoiled it like 10-20 minutes ago.
That's okay. I don't care. You still stole my thunder. It wasn't big thunder. It was pathetic thunder.
Big
but
thunder.
Yeah, I've returned to the world of On Topic. I got a few things. I had a really expensive weekend last weekend. I bought a lot of stuff. All at retail.
Lord.
I went to Toys R Us. And when I got to Toys R Us, Star Wars toys were on sale. Buy one, get one at 50% off. Or, was it 50% off or free? Whatever it was. I don't remember. Who cares? I looked at the actual Star Wars figures. Couldn't find any characters that I wanted. Went, eh. And then I noticed the Star Wars Transformers. And I went, you know, I've heard good stuff about these. And if, you know, I could get a deal, like, yeah, I could grab a couple. Ooh, General Grievous. I love that. Spaceship design. I'm totally going to get the General Grievous. And then I hem and hawed forever and ever on which other one I'm going to get. And I finally settled on the, like, triangular Jedi Starfighter of Obi-Wan. And I open up the General Grievous first, and I'm like, ooh, like, I love this spaceship design. It's so cool. And I transform, and I'm like, oh, the robot's kind of garbage, and I don't like how the legs work, and man, this thing's chintzy. Oh, I guess I'll open Obi-Wan Kenobi. And that one's really good. It's really nice for its size. And
I want to know which one that is, because there's a bunch of Obi-Wan Kenobis, and I like good Star Wars Transformers.
Well, I mean, there were two at this size. These are the newer, smaller ones.
Oh, the small ones! Okay, yeah, I do have that Obi-Wan. That Obi-Wan is really good. Yeah, I do have that guy.
Yeah. And like, they have... two, like the triangular-y ones and the little more potty kind of ones, and I got the triangular-y one, and yeah, that's pretty good. It's not bad for its size, and it does a lot of good stuff, and I like the sculpting, and that one's good. The Grievous is kind of eh. The vehicle mode looks great. The robot mode is kind of junk.
I agree.
Then I got a Bot Shot. I got Power Glide, because he's Power Glide. And everybody by now knows how Bot Shots work, so I don't really need to talk about that too much.
Bot Shot!
Bot Shot. And then we went over to Target, and I go to the Transformer section of Target, and there's the Prime figures, and I'm thinking, like, oh boy, I can't wait to see all these Bumblebees. And what is right in front of the peg? What is the first figure on the peg? Viacon. I've never seen a Viacon in the wild before. I couldn't believe it. I just grabbed it.
Man.
And then afterwards, when I tweeted about finally finding it, like, somebody on Twitter was asking me, like, how much did you pay? And I'm like, yeah, it was like $15 and change. And then somebody else was like, oh, you could get it cheaper somewhere else. I'm like, no, I can't. No, I can't. This is the one. And okay, I could have gotten it $2 less at some other store in some other state when the stars were aligned, but no, it's all right. Because I'm not troop building these guys. This is the only one I need. And yeah, like everybody has said, it's really, really good. It's an awesome figure. He's badass. I love that vehicle mode. It's just a cool, just tough, creepy looking car. I love how all that stuff folds up and hides away in his calves. And it's just good. It's a good figure. They did a good job. And that is my on topic.
Hot damn. Gog, I know you're on assignment at the moment, but have you found any Transformers this last couple weeks?
Kind of. Actually, someone found a Transformer for me. TFW member Oreo, who's a friend of mine,
that guy
was at a... He was at some sort of... toys. He was on vacation, I believe, with his wife, and ended up going into some sort of store that sold vintage toys, and he sent me a text message saying, like, hey, they got tons of Beast Wars stuff in here. I know you're into that. Is there anything in here, anything you're particularly looking for? And I was like, I don't know. How about a Transmetal 2 Black Arachnia? He's like, yeah, they got one for $13.
What?
Mint and sealed box. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. Yeah, apparently the outside box was crushed, but the figure inside was perfect, still in the twist ties and everything. So, yeah, I got a mint and sealed box, Transmetal 2 Black Arachnia. And I guess he donated clothes, and they had some thing where if you donate old clothes, they give you a coupon for so many percent off, so it actually only cost me $11.
Do you know how much that toy went for in the early 2000s?
Well, I know how much it's going for now, like $60.
Yeah, holy crap.
Yeah, so I got it for $11. So that was nice. So yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting figure. It's like her spider mode, I think, is my favorite part. It's just huge and crazy looking. The transformation is interesting. I think she has a few too many gimmicks for my liking. Like she has this weird where her waist will wind up, and then you push the robot head in, and her waist spins around, so she does, like, this circular spin kick.
Yep.
It's a little weird, but, you know, I guess you don't have to do it if you don't want to. The figure is really back-heavy, and at first I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this to stand. But I was able to. Like, you're not going to be able to put her in a lot of poses where she's standing under her own weight just because that backpack is huge and heavy, but... it's a neat figure. I'm glad that I got it, and I'm super thankful that Oreo picked it up for me. I think I might have felt a little bit of buyer's regret if I had paid the going rate right now of $50-$60 for that.
Yeah.
But I think for the price I paid, I am more than pleased with it. And, I don't know. It's neat. So I'm glad I got it, and I have like a thing for spider transformers, so I don't know. So I have yet another one to put in my collection, which basically consists of black arachnias and tarantuluses. So, another TFW member, Lumpy, asked me, he said, yeah, he's like, my comic store has got some stuff in, is there anything you want? And he told me some stuff they had, and I was like, yeah, how about, the sonar, because they had a Transmetal or Transmetal 2
TM2. Sonar?
Okay, yeah. So, and he's neat. That transformation, because I didn't actually get any instructions with him, so because he was loose, but it's still in good shape. But I guess you have to, like, from what I gathered, you have to, like, rotate the knees, like, in, and then, like, during the transformation, you push the legs through the body to the other side and then rotate the knees back. So
even with the instructions, that was when the basics had their instructions just printed in, like, three or four steps on the back of the card. And that toy I remember I got that toy when TM2s were still in stock at some stores but going on clearance. Mm-hmm. That toy took me... like half an hour to figure out when I was a kid.
once you figure it out, it's easy, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's very intuitive. It's more of a puzzle. And once you figure it out, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, but he's neat. And I think his bat mode looks really cool. I like the fact that he has, I think he has an opening jaw.
Yes.
On his head. So like, I thought that was cool, but he's neat. I'm glad that I picked him up. I think for a basic, he's pretty simple. Some of those basics are really simple, but I think, in his case, like it was, they found a way to make it complex and satisfying. for how small even simple he was. But so yeah, that is what I got on topic this week.
Cool. As far as on topic stuff, I got some stuff from Catch or Prey. I got got the Kabaya Fortress Maximus, who I have not yet built. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do for building it, because I'm going to record building it no matter what happens, because that's just who I am now. That's what I've become. And I'm trying to figure out, do I want to do it live, or should I just take a little bit more time and just figure it out and have a shorter, more concise video and do it by myself? I think I'm probably going to do it by myself, because it looks just intricate enough. We're doing a live one. Might be a little bit much, but I don't know. I'll see what people say when I start pestering folks about it. In the same box also were the second wave of the Capsule Arms Microns. And these include the very famous Bulkhead Knuckle. I'm just messing with the RC one right now. This is actually the one it's really interesting, but it's quite a bummer, because the way that she transforms is like her legs like split in half and just extend outwards to form the blade of a sword, while her arms curl around her backpack. And it's a bummer because kind of the way it's designed are these like C-clips, and the way you twist them is in just a certain angle whereby it's really easy to horrifically stress mark the C-clips. So that kind of sucks. It might just be mine, but the way I'm looking at it, it looks just the angles and the way you're supposed to pull on it is kind of risky, I'm finding. And the plastic is not bad, but it is capsule toy plastic, so there's some limitations. What is cool is RC's robot mode is, like, it's fully featured. It's got her wings. Her arms are in really weird, like, gorilla monkey positions, but she's basically got, like her ball-jointed shoulders and ball-jointed hips, so it's kind of cool, and she's a tiny little RC. And the capsule versions of the cast, once you have a bunch of them, like, I've got five of them now, they actually look really cool standing next to each other. The Megatron is kind of cool. He doesn't transform all that much, but he basically turns into a classic G1-looking Target Master gun, like a double-barreled gun made out of robot legs. And one of his arms has a spark crystal, but the other arm actually has a 5mm peg. And as seen in Piaw's video, that means that if you switch his arms so that the peg hole arm is on the right-hand side, you can take any of the Prime Megatron cannons and attach it to this tiny-ass little Megatron, and it looks really funny. And he totally has a decent head sculpt. In the crushed down details of the head sculpt, the one thing that really sticks out still are his eyebrows, which looks really cool and kind of goofy. There's also a turtle who turns into a shield. He's a mono-eyed Decepticon Arms Micron, sort of nondescript, fits in really well with the other ones. I like him quite a bit. But the star of this set is Bulkhead Knuckle, who is a fantastic Micron. He's got the same problem as the Bumblebee and Prime, in that there's nowhere really for his legs to lock in. There are just some little, like, slots for his heels to wedge into, and you kind of just, that's to show you where there's, but they're like stoppers, but they don't lock them down in place. However, he does have a tab for his arm to fold away and plug in to hold him into hand mode, and there are two slots back there, so you can fold back either his left or his right arm to make him into a left or right hand. And it's kind of thoughtful design in there. There's one thing I wish he could do. I wish his head could fold away, because it's always visible in either knuckle mode. The arms can lock together to cover his head, but that's not for a knuckle mode. That's actually for the super weapon mode, where you combine them with Bumblebee and Prime to form a crossbow thing. And here's what I'm going to say. If you think this is the stupidest toy in the world, the idea of a little bulkhead who turns into a giant fist, then, you know, just don't buy him. But if you think the toy is a cool idea and you're going to pick one up, buy two. No matter where you are, no matter how you're getting it, there's got to be a way for you to get two. And if the place you're buying from only sells them in sets, find somewhere else and buy two Bulkhead Knuckles. Because if you already think this is a cool toy idea and you end up buying one, all that's going to happen is you're going to have buyer's regret that you didn't buy two. And then you're going to end up trying to track down another one and paying a whole extra set of shipping for a second one. Just skip that whole process. Buy two Bulkhead Knuckles. I took a bunch of pictures and put them on Twitter when I got this guy, sort of showing a proof of concept as to why, if you're already going to get him, you should get two. I outfitted Classics Retgar with a pair of Bulkhead Knuckles and put up the phrase, "Eliminate even the toughest stains." It totally works. I also showed him off mounted onto Fall of Cybertron Bruticus as my new exclusive first look Fall of Cybertron Bruticus hand upgrade kit. And it actually looks pretty okay. The nature by which this toy attaches to things, which is that the forearm has a peg in it, and then there's a double-ended peg inside the fist. So you can plug this down into a fist or up into the bottom of a fist. It's a really smartly designed accessory for what it's supposed to do. It's basically, if you have two of them, it is basically Transformer Hulk hands, but they're designed really intelligently. And I am very, very impressed. And as much as I already thought the idea was cool, I'm more impressed with them than I thought I would be. I didn't think it was going to be this cool. So I would highly recommend Bulkhead Knuckle to whoever can, like, you know, unless you literally just don't want anything to do with this silly idea, you should look into it because it's really cool. And while we're talking about stuff that we got, I'm probably going to just send you guys links to pictures. Did you guys see the pictures I put up on Twitter?
Yeah, I saw some of them. I don't know if I saw every one of them, but I definitely saw a few of them.
Okay, did you see the Bruticus one? That was the one that really, like, I did it just thinking, like, this could be cool. And then when I did it, I was like, surely this is not the first time someone tried to do this, because this makes way too much sense. I'll show you that picture now. And this is even just with, like, just two random arm mountings. They fit on there perfectly. It's like Bruticus now has giant fists.
That looks pretty good.
Judgment McGodley was saying that this was really pushing him in the direction of the hypothetical that Toy's been talking about, which is the four brawl Bruticus. Where you just give him, like, you just get four brawls in an onslaught and make a tank Bruticus. Because Bulkhead Knuckle fits in with Brawl's arm mode surprisingly well. So anyway, Bulkhead Knuckle, highly recommend it. Could buy a Fort Max. I haven't built it yet, but I will. And that's my on-topic what we got. Gog, what kind of off-topic what we got did you do? I already know, but I'm just going to ask you.
Well, sadly, one of the figures that I've been looking forward to, which I'm sure you'll hear about from good old Seth over there, is waiting for me, because I'm not currently at home. I am away on a business trip. I am in a hotel room. Thankfully, I'm allowed to record at all, or able to, but my wonderful Play Arts Kai Garris is waiting for me in a box on my desk at work, so I will have him next episode. But in the meantime, I was lucky enough to get my hands on a couple of NECA figures. One that I wasn't sure if I was going to get or not, but I ended up deciding to get it anyway. And the other I have been looking forward to for months. I'll talk about that last one first. I got a hold of NECA Gordon Freeman. I've had him pre-ordered on BBTS for a long time. For some reason, BBTS still hasn't gotten any in, and so I lost patience. They had some on Amazon for about $5 more, but because I have an Amazon Prime membership, it ended up costing me the same with free two-day shipping. So I said, screw it. I canceled my BBTS order and went ahead and had them ship one. I get a hold of it, and he is pretty cool. He is way better than I expected him to be. Certainly not perfect. He's not, you know, like an SH figure art level of posability or anything like that. But he is better than I expected from some of the early reviews I had read and some of the pictures. I mean, I never thought that he looked bad. I just figured that he would be kind of underwhelming. But, hey, at least we finally got a Gordon Freeman, and there's something right with the world when that happens. Thankfully, a lot of the things I worried about ended up being way better. Mainly his leg articulation. Like, you can't make him just have, like, a neutral stand, like, legs straight position. It's not like a Reveltech where, he only looks natural in a crazy pose. It's just, it's more of those, like, the legs won't go straight up and down, but anything even, you know, a little more than that, he'll look fine. His legs are really articulated. Like, he has this weird, like, a hip swivel joint, but he also has this weird outward, three-position ratchet that holds really well. It's hard to explain, but it just works. He has a thigh swivel that's done really well, like the orange part of his armor where it goes around the gray part, like it swivels. He's got swivels at his knees, and he has ball-jointed ankles, which have a pretty good range of movement, and they work really well. Really impressed. His arms are really poseable. He doesn't have any bicep swivel, but his elbows swivel, which really, I mean, I guess it's just not a lot he can't do. I'd say the only thing that bugs me about his arms is he doesn't have the newer joints that they use in the Gears of War figures where the shoulder socket actually swings out, so which helps the those figures with, like, assault rifle poses and stuff.
Oh, like the shoulder blade swivel. Had
something like that, even, like, a subtle one that didn't move as far, but... even so, like, it's not a huge knock against the figure. He's pretty fine without it. He has a torso joint with pretty decent mobility and all around. He can get decent, like, side to side motion with the torso ball. The only thing is, like, it's so stiff that, like, one of the reviews that I had read said that, well, he has a ball torso, but it's so limited that it really only acts as a peg swivel. And, like, mine, I don't know if theirs was just something wrong with it or what, but, like, mine was really tight, but it's like once you put a little bit of pressure on it, like, you can get a decent range of movement. And I think maybe they were just afraid that it was going to break and assume that it didn't move that far, but on mine it was fine. And he also has a ball-jointed neck, which is really cool. Like, it's not, like, huge degrees of motion, but I think it works really, really well for what it is. And, like, the thing I'm most impressed about most with him is, like, the face. Like, I thought the pictures looked okay. It's like, okay, I mean, you look at him and you think Gordon. But, like, in person, I think it's so much better. And one thing that I was really impressed with what they did with the figure is he actually has glasses that are they're tabbed and glued into the side of his head, but they're molded as a separate piece. But the lenses and the glasses are actually clear plastic, which on a lot of figures that have tried to do that, I've found – it just doesn't look all that great, but, like, they knocked it out of the park. Like, they look like real glasses on his head, but it's not so cloudy to where it obscures anything. It looks like he's looking through a plastic cup or something. So, I don't know. Like, I'm really impressed. If you're a fan of Half-Life, I think you should get this guy for sure, because I think this guy is going to go for a good deal of money on the aftermarket. His accessories, he comes with two sets of hands. He comes with an in-scale head crab. The head crab is not poseable or anything, but it's painted really well. You turn it over, and, like, all the teeth, it's got blood splatter marks and stuff under it. I think it's done really well. He comes with his trademark crowbar, which is painted really well. It looks like a little, hunk of metal crowbar. And he comes with the pheromone pod for the antlions in Half-Life 2. And he comes with, of course, the gravity gun. And, like, I kept looking at the gravity gun, and I'm like, why does it just seem weird and plain to me? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's because in the game it's always, like, glowing bright orange, and you can't do that in plastic. So once I realized that, I'm like, okay, now I understand why something with this gravity gun just doesn't feel right. It's because it's not glowing bright colors, and that's not something that you could do unless you wanted to put, like, an LED in there, which I'm sure some crazy fan will do or make their own. But as it stands, I think it's fine the way it is. And it's also cool because now you have a head crab and a gravity gun that are in scale with 6-inch figures. And I can give pretty much any figure I want a gravity gun now. And that's kind of cool. And you have a head crab that you can take all sorts of funny pictures with. So, yes, absolutely recommend NECA Gordon Freeman. It is a... It's not the end-all, be-all of action figures, but it is a really decent action figure, and I think they did the franchise well. So I'm very pleased with him, and I hope they do more. They're doing all sorts of other Valve games, but I don't think they've announced anything from actual Half-Life 2. So I hope we get, like, some Combine Soldiers or a Barney or something. And just yesterday, me and Quinjester were scoping out some of the local stores around here in the wonderful Cleveland area, which has all jack for anything. But the one thing that they did have is they had gotten in the new NECA Prometheus figures. I ended up picking up the chair suit, which, because I'm a really big fan of the first two Alien movies, so the guy who is in the chair suit, like, that design is kind of iconic. So I picked him up, and he is also pretty decent. Like, he's kind of plain, but, I mean, that's just the design. It's not a knock on the figure as far as, like, paint-wise. But what they did is really well done. Like, he comes in multiple shades of metallic, blacky, pewter gunmetal color. He also has a pretty decent range of mobility. Like, his ankles are on balls, and they have a crazy range of movement. His wrists are on balls, which Gordon's are too. I don't think I mentioned that. Yeah, I mean, he is what he is. You look at him, and he—I mean, what you see is what you get. But he's, for what he is, he's fairly articulated. So
that's good to hear.
I don't think I'm going to get anything else from the Prometheus line. Like I said, I mostly got this one just because of the ties to the original Alien movie. But I'm glad that I picked him up. He's nicer than I expected. I think when NECA decides to put articulation in figures, I think they do a really good job. I just wish that they were more consistent, because a lot of the stuff they do is just like. Like the movie, I guess it's mostly the movie stuff, like the Terminator stuff and all that. Like, it's just like, we're going to put in opposable head and arms, and everything from the waist down is not going to have any of that.
Yeah.
Which bums me out, because they're doing stuff for like the, again, for the Aliens movies, the, like the humans. Like, I think they're doing a Hicks. I don't know if that stuff has been finalized or not, because I know they were saying that some of it was in kind of pre-production, like pre-licensing. But, like, from the looks of that, some of that stuff looks like it might be posable and some won't. So, I don't know. We'll see. But, like I said, I wish they were more consistent with that stuff. But these two are pretty good. So, if you're concerned about the quality, I would say get them if you're interested in them.
Oh, excellent.
And that's all I got.
I really enjoyed Prometheus, so I've been looking forward to hearing about the Nika figures.
I think it's sad that we're in the minority with that, but I won't argue with it. But
yeah, I'm not gonna start the discussion. All I'm gonna tell you is seek and commiserate, you know, and from a distance, Jacob at the video store, they've got Prometheus, and he has spent months getting himself ready for basically customers coming in and giving him Prometheus and telling him how much they didn't like it, and he has already gotten some people who really violently didn't like the movie. And he's been weathering that storm in a position where he can't really get into a discussion about it. And, you know, that's one of the risks you take when you work at a video store. But in this case in particular, he was really not looking forward to it, especially with the very misleading way the DVD is being marketed.
I haven't even caught any of that. So
I'll tell you after the show. Remind me to tell you after the show. It's if you've seen Prometheus, seeing the way the DVD is marketed is quite frustrating.
No, that's a shame. Anyway. And unfortunately, as is the case with a lot of that stuff, video games, movies, TV shows, the people who are in charge of marketing it are not the people who necessarily made it.
Yeah.
This especially true with the fact that this is Fox, because I'm pretty sure Fox owns the licensing to this. I know Fox on television is horrible. Like, I used to watch the show, 24, which is a show that started off pretty good and slowly spiraled into this weird situation where the show continued to become layer after layer of just becoming a caricature of itself to the point to where it was utter, like, you were watching it for getting enjoyment out of it for reasons it was never intended to. Like, almost like meta games. Like, how many times are they going to do this season? Because they have no other ideas. So it was like they would recycle ideas like every season, and then it got to the point to where they were recycling multiple ideas multiple times in one season, and it was just horrible. But the first couple seasons of that show were pretty good, but that show was just notorious for, like, the advertisements showing just major spoilers.
Okay.
Like, sometimes three episodes in advance.
Here's what I'm going to tell you.
Huge plot twist that would absolutely ruin the enjoyment for anyone.
This leaves out spoilers for people who have not seen Prometheus, but for people who have seen Prometheus, one of the ways it's advertised, a video advertisement, which is playing on a giant billboard television in the middle of downtown Toronto, not only shows literally one of the final scenes of the movie. Yes,
that is Fox.
But it also then says, buy the DVD to find out all the answers. And it's like, what answers? And why are you showing the end of the movie? And
Yeah. Fox is notorious for that. And I despise anyone who works for Fox Marketing, because they pull that crap all the time, and they have for years.
Yeah, and Prometheus, of all movies, to just show the ending. It's like, sure, just blow the movie's load. Right, I mean, there is movie to be seen in Prometheus, but I mean, to just blow the load like that, because okay, I'll go into this afterwards. But I mean, that is in particular misleading. Anyway, that aside. Hey Seth, what did you get that wasn't Transformers this week? We've killed him.
I forgot to turn my mute back on.
Oh,
got a few off-topic things. While at that Toys R Us where I got the Star Wars stuff and Power Glide, checking out what Marvel figures they had, there's an exclusive box set to Toys R Us out there. You get Cyclops, Angel, Jean Grey, Iceman, Mr. Sinister, and Apocalypse. What made the completely irresistible to me was the heroes are done up in X-Factor colors.
I've seen that box.
They're X-Factor colors. And Iceman even has the inhibitor belt that he wore for a while in X-Factor.
Oh, man.
My disappointment with the box is if I could have had it my way, would have left Mr. Sinister out. I don't really think of him as an X-Factor villain. Apocalypse, definitely. That's where Apocalypse came from, was X-Factor. I would have kicked out Mr. Sinister, and I would have had Human Beast. That would have made it the most amazing box set. His X-Factor was the first superhero comic I collected. And, like, read seriously. And if, like, the original... Oh, man, it would have been so good. A word of warning on this set, though. Take a minute to look at the paint apps on Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Angel. Especially Jean Grey. I went through everyone they had there, and they had, like, 9. And all of them had poorly applied paint apps on at least one of the characters, and it was usually Jean. I think just however they were stenciling or tampoing or whatever, however they were putting that big X on her, just couldn't handle the curvy female body as well as the male bodies, and even the male bodies could have been better.
How much does that set run in the States?
I had gotten a bunch of stuff altogether, and it was like one of those situations of I'm not even looking at prices.
It's 50 bucks over here.
Yeah, I think it was close to that. Like maybe it was 40, 45, but it was pushing that.
I've been eyeing that for a while. I don't know if I can pull the trigger at 50.
Yeah, you just if it's blotchy, like look at those paint apps.
Yeah.
And be careful. I haven't opened it yet. I don't know. I just wasn't in a rush to open it. I couldn't resist that X-Factor color scheme. It doesn't look like Apocalypse has the hoses on his arms, though.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whatever. I have the original Apocalypse color scheme, so it's fine. Mr. Sinister. I've never been a fan of the character. So, you know, whatever. It would have been better if Beast was in there.
I like his cape. That's what I've always liked about him. His cape is really silly because it's made of, like, strips.
Yeah. It seems complicated. And I always thought that name was dumb. Mr. Sinister. Like, really?
He's a bad guy.
For a living. I'm Sinister. All right. Why don't you get some stun, son, because you were very pale. Ooh. It's more Sinister to be in the dark.
He has a soul patch, too.
Yeah. Ugh. 90s design. Now, if in every... like animation or anything that they ever use Mr. Sinister, and if he talked like that, then okay, I'd be more into him. Kept referring to things as being sinister. Like if he, like if he had a vehicle, like if he had a car and it was like the Seneca. Oh. Then that'd be good. But anyway. So that's that box set. As was alluded to, play Arts Garrus. GogDog had pointed out via Twitter that Big Bad Toy Store was still not sending him out.
And yeah, they have it listed for November.
Yeah. And you had found that with free shipping, it's actually cheaper to get it from Amazon. So I went and looked, and it said one left in stock. And I went, ah! And I grabbed it and then went to Big Bad Toy Store and canceled my pre-order and had it 2 days later. Because Prime is good. And so is PlayArts Garrus. Just all the details. Very well done. If you've messed with PlayArts figures before, you probably have a good idea of what to expect from the articulation, and I do not think Garrus will leave you lacking. I like that his, like, big shoulder bits are on some joints, so you could pull them up and move them out of the way, and then put the arm the way you like it, and then sort of refit the shoulder pad back down to look good. There's been lots of figures that have done similar things. I'm glad that this one does it too.
Mm-hmm.
The assault rifle he comes with, the Vindicator, is the assault rifle I've used primarily in campaign until recent DLC added the Cerberus Harrier. So I appreciated getting one of my preferred guns from the game. The sniper rifle he comes with is not my favorite sniper rifle, but, you know, whatever. I have him holding that sniper rifle right now anyway, because, you know, it seems like that's what you want Garrus to be holding, is a sniper rifle. He could actually stand pretty well for his, like, crazy feet. You do have to be careful standing him up. Like, you gotta make sure he's balanced for it to work. One complaint that I have is the way his head is painted. It's sculpted with all kinds of little nooks and crannies to give that texture of a Turian face. And then that is like dry brushed to lighten it up. But the dry brushing is not applied evenly. In some places you could see where they were going for the effect, and then in some places it's way too heavy, and it fills in a lot of the detail, so it just kind of makes his whole head kind of blotchy and uneven, which is a shame because it's so well sculpted otherwise. Like, his upper lip kind of plates on mine has, like, one of those, like, really blotched sections, so, like, that. So this big chunk of one half of his upper lip is almost completely smooth and very bright, while he just below it has hardly no paint on it at all, and just the details get thrown off, and the sculpting, the quality of the sculpting gets hidden. Otherwise, the coloring and the paint on the rest of his armor is pretty much as good as you could hope for. Like, it's right on there. It's right on. And with the articulation that PlayArts figures have, he can hold those guns with two hands in all kinds of ways that you would want him to hold it. Like, have him holding these guns in very natural positions for holding him at rest, holding him at the ready, holding him like he's getting ready to shoot or is shooting. Lots of good articulation. The big metal collar that Turians have, there's detail down inside that. Just all around very well sculpted. I'm very much looking forward to Tally. And I have Tally and Femship pre-order at BBTS. If things kind of go the way they went with this, I'll probably be keeping an eye on Amazon and see if they show up there for less. But yeah, I'm skipping male Shepard. I'm skipping Ashley. I'm only getting Femme Shep because that's what my Shepard was. And like the majority of the time, the squad I would roll with was my Shepard, Garrus, and Liara. So I'm really hoping a Liara is going to happen just so I could have my default squad. We'll see if there are any waves past the upcoming second group. I hope they are, because it seems weird that they would not do Liara at all. Like, you would think that they would not do Ashley before they didn't do Liara.
Or even, like, specifically a Mass Effect 3 Ashley as well. Like, that's the one that I found really odd off the bat.
Yeah, because there's so much chance that you don't even have Ash in your game.
Yeah, I didn't. Like, I don't need that toy. She wasn't with me for 2/3 of the adventure.
Yeah, and I think she's a lot less interesting looking in 3. Like, the outfit that she has doesn't...
I agree with everything you said.
Yeah, so it just seems so weird that they would do Ashley and not characters that people actually give a crap about. So they got to do more. I mean, they did 6 Halo Reach figures. So who knows? Maybe they're at their limit, but I'm hoping not. And Garrus looks kind of cool with Kat from Halo Reach, because they're both like blue, and they're both in armor, and they're both from outer space, and they're both badasses. I tweeted a picture of the day I got it. I don't know if you guys saw, but I titled it 3 Video Game Badasses.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and the third was a red Angry Bird. Which is something that I did also get off topic, but it was in between shows. So Kinex has a series of building block Angry Bird toys. The sets let you build like the kind of things that you're shooting the birds at in the game. And those sets come with pigs and birds and a slingshot, and you are actually launching the bird toy at what you build, which is crazy. But they're also selling individual birds and pigs blind packed. It did not take me very long on my iPhone to find a key that let you figure out what's inside, because America, or I'll say North America, can't do blind packing without putting something on the packaging that gives away what's inside, from the Lego bump codes to the crayon numbers to the Angry Birds, which have a serial number that is exactly the same on all the packages. So, okay, the number is exactly the same on all the packages, but every package, one of the numbers either has 1 or 2 lines under one of the digits, and that indicates what bird is inside. So the number that's underlined lets you know what color bird it is, or pig, or what kind of pig. So like if the second digit, I don't remember exactly how it went, but like if the second digit is underlined, that's a yellow bird. If there's 1 line, then it's the original yellow bird. If there's 2 lines, then it's the laser bird from space. So it's either the original style or the space style, depending on how many lines are underneath. So, yay for not having to worry about which birds I was getting. So I was able to get the 3 I wanted. The red bird, because that is like the title bird. That's the icon bird. The yellow bird, which I always enjoy using because I find them very versatile and useful. And the black bird, because the black bird is the most awesome. Because he blows up like crazy.
He's the one that makes the game just pick up fun, I think.
Yeah.
Black He's like, bird. Where can I wedge him in and then blow him up?
Yeah, and just make a mess. Blackbird is badass. In my 3 video game badass picture, my original thought was to use the Blackbird, but then I thought, you know, it'd blend in. And the red bird is sort of like the iconic Angry Bird, and he'll stand out more being bright red against these 2 dark blue space soldiers. Then the last thing I got, is 4 things. I got all four of the new Ninja Turtles. I didn't get the crazy talky ones. I got like the basic ones.
Oh, like the posable ones?
Yeah. I have been hearing so much from people about how awesomely articulated these guys are. I am disappointed with their articulation. Their shoulders and hips are great. Their knees and elbows are sorely lacking in range of movement, especially their elbows.
I think a lot of people have been selling the wrong part of the articulation, and those toys have... I think it sucks to say those turtles are becoming overhyped in the wrong way. To me, the big victory about their articulation is more so that it's even there and that it's functional. Less that it's like superposability. Like, they can't do everything. And I think some people are overselling them in a couple of different ways, which is a bummer.
The hips and shoulders, I think, are perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice range of motion in the shoulders and the hips. Knees and elbows, they just don't bend far enough for my taste. Especially the elbows. Like, I don't even think they're 45 degrees. Like, maybe 40 degrees. That's all you're getting out of them. They barely bend because the sculpting of their pads completely blocks any motion. The sculpting for their knee pads does not go all the way around to the back of their leg, so there's less reason for their knees not to bend as far or farther, but they still don't bend that far. What I do like about them is they just didn't do one body and four heads.
Mm-hmm.
There's variation between their arms and legs. I haven't like studied all their arms and legs like super close to see if there's any parts reused. I believe that there are parts reused, but not in every case. Like Michelangelo's arms and legs are shorter, which makes that figure shorter. Donatello's are longer. He's the tallest. There's a variation in their heights, which I think is great. I think the variation in their skin tone is all right. There's variation in their tone in the show. That's fine. I think Raphael's a little too dark, though. And I hate his teeth. Because he has the biggest, snarliest face. And the white paint for his teeth kind of bleeds out a little off his teeth. And there's no shading at all on his teeth. Like, some black outlining would help immensely. And maybe I'll do that sometime. But it just looks like this big white blob in his mouth. And But one thing that I will say that I do like about Raphael is his right hand. The way his fingers are separated. You can't do this with his left hand. His fingers are closer together. But you can stick his sai in his hand in that way. They show him holding it sometime where his fingers are going in between the prongs instead of just holding it by the handle.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's cool that at least on one of his hands you could do that alternate method of holding the sai. And it's cool that he has the crack on the chest part of a shell like he does in the show. There's nice details. They're a little rounder than the character models in the show. The show, they seem a little more squared off. So they're not completely on model, but, you know, they're good. Don't go in expecting super badass articulation because they are lacking. But yeah, that show is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm digging it.
I started watching it. I wouldn't have bothered buying these things if I didn't start watching the show. I wasn't really going out of my way to watch the show, and I probably wouldn't be watching at all if it wasn't for Dashiana on Twitter, who I've been watching it with via the internet, and I'm glad she got me to watch it because it's a very enjoyable show. I the the choreography and the animation, like the fight choreography, is awesome. Like the best, the most well done fights I think I've seen in any domestic television animation. It's really kind of amazing. One complaint about the show: when they're up on the surface, out in the city, there are no people living in the city. There's like one human per episode.
Oh, they're just, you know, they're up there really late. That's all that's happening.
There's nobody driving around except for the Krang. There's no people anywhere. They're not, that is an empty ass city. It's just dead empty. That's like the one kind of weird thing about it. And then, you know, a little, the Krang's, you know, mode of speech, their syntax gets along. Okay. You know, but, the Krang, Nolan North.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great example of Nolan North talking to himself when all the Krang are talking to each other in that long way that they do. But yeah, that's all I got this week.
Cool. I'll take us out with, I'll start off with a few more Ninja Turtles. I picked up a, from the new show, I decided to pick up one of the toys that was not the Turtles. So far I've only had the Turtles and Shredder, as well as the Shell Razor. So I picked up a Foot Ninja, a Foot Soldier Ninja dude. And, so he's one of the normal figures, which means that he has a lot less posability than the Turtles. But he actually is okay. I like him. He's got a really good sculpt. He comes with a sheath, goes on his back, a short sword and a long sword that go in the sheath, and a pair of throwing stars he can hold. So you can actually have all of his accessories on him in one go, which is already kind of cool. And now he is not super posable, but he's actually decently posable because he's got a cut neck, a cut waist, which I didn't know he had, and that changed my perception on the toy immediately. Then universal jointed hips and shoulders, and then cut elbows. So they're not like hinged elbows, but where the sculpting of his forearms meets his elbows, you can swivel them there, which, due to the way his forearms are sculpted, offers some very slight altering of his posture. And he also has wrist swivels as well. So he's not super poseable, but he's poseable enough such that you can make him look like he's doing different things. If there's one problem I had, it's that I wish he had just one cut joint somewhere in each leg. That would make him way better. But he gives me hope because I'm probably going to end up getting the rest of the line because I'm really liking the show. And I really want to get like a Splinter and I want to get a Krang. And I know that those are not very poseable toys. But seeing what the limited range posability is like on a Foot Ninja made me feel a little bit better about those toys. Cause you know, they're not going to be super posable, but it seems like they're still going to be expressive in some way. And that's what I really would like. I just want joints that are there that are not useless. And it looks like that's going to be something in that line. So I'm feeling a little bit better about that line on the whole now outside of the four brothers. And also while I was at that Walmart, I saw a classics Ninja Turtles Donatello. And I'm not used to seeing those classics turtles outside of Toys R Us where they're marked up to $22-23. So this is $20. I was like, whatever. He's a Donatello. His eyes are pointing in the same direction. Why not? I haven't picked one of these up yet. So I picked him up, pulled him open. It's a good toy. I mean, it's a great body. It's super jointed. Like, it's individual finger, individual toe joint type stuff. A double jointed thumb. And it, you know, it's cool. He just comes with a stand and his bow. I don't dislike him, but I think that the better value in terms of sheer bang for your buck is still in the new show Turtles. Like, they aren't as posable, but for under $40, you've got all four of them. If you want to get all four Turtles in the classics form, you're paying like $80, and I feel like the improvements are not worth double the cost of one of the Turtles. If getting this guy down to $15, like if this guy could be sold for $15 with maybe less joints in his fingers and toes, and maybe like just I don't know, like just a few less joints. If that could have shaved $5 off the cost of this guy, I think it would have been maybe better on the whole. Because even though I've got one and I kind of dig him, I want to get the other three, but I'm in absolutely no rush to do so because they're so expensive. And also, like, as far as I can tell, they very much share a body, so you're not getting that cool effect of the individual bodies from the smaller ones. So it's definitely not a bad toy, but I feel like, for my tastes, I'm more interested in the small figures. I will say, though, as someone who has crapped on Playmates a lot in the last few years, the Classics Turtle body is probably the best thing I have ever seen come out of Playmates. And they really do need to give themselves a pat on the back for pulling something off like this. I hope this is the start of a long run of impressive releases from Playmates and not a one-off thing that happened just because someone liked Ninja Turtles. We won't know how that turns out until, you know, we go a few years in the future. But it was impressive. So, you know, well done, Playmates. Well done, Ninja Turtles. I also got some Japanese toys from Japan. The first one that I got, the most exciting one for most people, is a Super Robot Chogokin of the Daijujin, which is better known in America as the Megazord. I have a couple of Super Robot Chogokins, and they have gone woefully unplayed with since I got to Toronto. So I was messing with the Megazord, or the Daijujin, and he is just a fantastic toy. Really, really poseable, really well-done poseability. He comes with his big-ass sword, and then to make the sword look like it's going to cut a monster in half, it has this kind of semi-translucent yellow plastic sheath with lightning effects sculpted onto it, like hard plastic, darker yellow translucent lightning running through that stuff, and you just slide it over top of the sword like a sheath, and he looks like he's going to cut a dude in half. The cannons on his back are double-jointed to, like, come up over his shoulders. He's got a really expressive neck joint. The Triceratops head and Sabertooth Tiger head that are his feet can not only extend down, but can, like, rotate forward in a way such that they're like a toe joint, which I think is really ingenious given that they don't even look like feet, but they work like feet now. So it's a very impressive figure. I know a lot of... It's probably one of the Super Robot Shogokins that more North American folks are interested in than most others. So it's getting a Bluefin release with actually a new box that says the Megazord on it rather than Daijujin. And I think that release is going to go really well. Super Robot Shogokin, if you haven't figured out quite yet, is a pretty damn good line of toys. Continuing on that same bent, I got a couple of SH Figure Arts. Of some other Power Ranger-y looking dudes. I got a Boken Red. It's one of my favorite Sentai guys because he's a badass. And in the picture I have shared on the chat, he comes with a hand specifically to make him snap his fingers to get people to attack people. And he comes with a gigantic amount of accessories. It's really, really impressive how many accessories he comes with. And he comes with something for the Akiba Rangers. It's a giant shovel that he turns into in Akiba Ranger. And they actually made four more hands for an Akiba Ranger character to use the shovel. So this guy comes with a ton of accessories and then a ton of accessories for a completely different toy. So I'm impressed, and he's pretty tall too. And then the star of the show by far is the Figure Arts Red Hawk. This is from a Sentai show that happened right before the one that turned into Power Rangers. And that Sentai show is considered one of the best in that franchise's history, and was very much homaging Gatchaman, or Battle for the Planets, or whatever it was called over here, in that the guys are all bird-themed, and they've got, like, these abdominal wings that can extend out in a way that doesn't actually make any sense physically. So the way the figure does it is you literally just remove his shoulder blade back piece and plug on one that has wings. It's also got tons of accessories and just is a very well-done figure body, or I guess a buck. They came up with like these two in particular are some of the best I've seen out of Figure Arts. Like, just the, especially Red Hawk, he's got bicep swivels that are almost similar to Gutokuru in a way. His bicep swivels are inset within the shoulders, but instead of Gutokuru's more simple ball joint inside the socket kind of way, it's like this guy's got a bicep swivel inset inside a sleeve that connects to another plate that covers up the ball joint connection to his shoulder, which is then covered up by the kind of hawk thing that's hanging over top of his shoulders. It's really, really smartly done. So I had a very brightly colored spandex hero-y couple of days, and I'm digging it a lot. New York Comic Con's had a lot of reveals about this stuff, too. Like, they've got SH Monster Arts King Kong showed up there. The Super Robot Shogokin Daiboken, which matches up nicely with Boken Red and makes a lot of people think they're going to do Jet Icarus, which would be badass. thanks to a couple people on Twitter, I'm watching Jetman, and it's a pretty good show. It's very classic Shaw Brothers-y Hong Kong-style action, and I'm kind of digging it. Lots of rock quarries. And I believe that is all I got this week, aside from sort of not being as sick and getting a gigantic Polish sausage-sized centipede under my bed, who hopefully, while I've been doing this podcast, took his leave of the room. I don't know. We'll find out later. But, yeah, that's all we got this week. So, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Seth Buzzard and Gog Dog, for joining me once again. Thanks, Gog, for taking time out of your business trip to chill with us here. I hope you have a good weekend dealing with the public. And hope that you enjoy your hotel.
I will so far. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Free alcohol is nice.
I like free alcohol. If you want to leave us a voicemail, the Google voicemail inbox is 318-775-9830. That is 318-775-9830. 318-775-9830. My name is Vangelis, and I was joined by Seth Buzzard and Gog Dog. We'll be back again another week with some more Transformers talk here on WTF at TFW.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.